listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Black Guy Who Tips. I'm your host, Rod, joined as always by my co-host,
Karen.
And we are live on a Monday afternoon with, voted the Black Guy Who Tips fan base's favorite guest of the show, Chris Lamberth. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, man. Yes. We appreciate you, man. I know it's been a while.
Taking the time.
But you know, people know we go way back. So you know, it's, Chris was, the person that opened up our live show.
Yes.
You know, Chris, been a guest on the podcast many times. Mm-hmm. I've been a guest on his show many times.
Yes, you introduced us to a lot of great people, particularly Randolph and Andy and them from Three Guys On.
Right. JL Coban too.
Oh, JL too.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah. And they've all their podcasts are all doing way better than mine.
You know, well, you just gotta throw the alley-oop sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just throw the alley-oop and, you know, they go dunk it. That's what's up.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at all.
But you know what, Chris? We got this running joke that people that come on our show get the Black Guy Who Tips bump. And if it wasn't for the Rona, you was on your way.
Well, I was gonna say, with the Rona stuff, I mean, Chris has been all over TV and stuff.
He's been in movies. Big time stuff.
At this point, I mean, I count Chris amongst the bumped people.
Yeah, he's trying to downplay it.
Yeah, you can catch me all over TV, like giving exposition. He went there. This guy, you need this thing.
Listen, Jessica Jones could have slammed anyone up against the wall, okay? But somebody needs to be slammed. Jessica Jones' mama got to slam somebody up against the wall. And why not you, Chris?
Come on, why not?
Yeah, and then come to find out that's, you know, Janet McTeer, like, famous actress. And she was in Ozark. She got her head blown. Oh, never mind.
Yep, exactly. Somebody told her something and her head, she was like, my mind is blown, okay? It was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was many revelations we had.
Yeah.
We always, you know, pay attention to the stuff you're doing over there, man.
Doing big things.
And in addition to that, it's a very, big time for you because you're dropping an album for the first time ever, your stand-up album.
Yes, yeah. I call it an EP, you know, but if people say, I let people say what they want, you know, because it's called Failed Running Back, and it's available for pre-order on Amazon and iTunes right now, and then it'll be all over. But it was, my reaction to, the COVID-19, the coronavirus. It's like my reaction, like to say, well, you know, if I died from that shit, then you'd get hours of me blabbing on a podcast talking about comedy, but you would never really get that much of a document of me doing stand up. So, I just decided to put together some of my favorite bits and put them into an EP and put it out there for consumption and to hopefully not get canceled.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about being canceled.
Well, I don't know about that, but we listened to, the podcast.
I said, hopefully you won't do anything that would cause you to be canceled.
Well, that's not, I mean, I think he means more like someone taking a joke the wrong way or I'm offended.
Okay,
I wrote a Medium piece on the microaggressions of Chris Lamberth way I felt violated from his joke. That can easily happen to anyone.
Okay. When that's the case, you probably gonna get canceled because somebody somewhere gonna be offended by something.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine, but, and I think also at this point, the people that like cancel comedians are like kind of helping, you know, it would almost be better to have someone get super offended, take what you said out of context, be angry, try to rile up a bunch of people, than to just, you know, like have the album go out and just do good. It's like, nah, you can't, it's better promotion if somebody's like,
ain't it promotion?
We should hashtag cancel Chris Lamberth would be trending. That's actually better.
Yeah, people go, who is this Chris? Let me go check him out.
help me make some car payments and maybe get a MacBook.
Come on, I don't blame you.
And it's free. You know what I mean? Like, it's free promotion because they don't get paid for doing that stupid shit. Mm-mm. And then they put your name in a bunch of people's brains and, you know, that's how it would work. But I don't think, you know, there was nothing on the album that made me feel like, God damn, Chris. Like, I can't believe this nigga, right? Wow, I thought we could have him on the show. I don't know about it now. But yeah. I will say this, man. It was so funny. And then, you also, I could, cause you know, we've heard some of the jokes before from seeing you several times, and you like your confidence with the material and your handle of the material and the act outs and the, like the kind of like emotion you put into it. Like it actually brought the, even though I had heard the joke before, I was like, oh, nah, he's nailing it now. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, I thought it was good before, but then it's like, if you see, I don't know, like you see an NBA player do a dunk that you like, damn, that's a dope ass dunk. But then you see him do like, add a windmill to the shit and you're like, oh, this is the dunk from earlier, but the shit is like even better. So like, that shit was cracking me up. And then the way you like piece the bits together and the way it flows thematically, if anything, if I mean, and this is something that obviously isn't necessarily negative, but if anything, it might be too short because like it's such a good time. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's over already.
That's what I was like, oh, that's quick.
That was so damn funny.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I mean, that was some, I was kind of thinking about like, there's actually two tracks, like 10 minutes that I realized that I had that was good that I could have put on there. So I'm putting it on my Patreon. So like when you, if you get the album and you sign up for Patreon, you can get the two bonus tracks. It's bits that I can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. It's one about like Trump's inauguration and then how I've chosen the new black family for us to believe in. So in the midst of that, so that was like that's a 10 minute chunk, but I figured like, you know, I never got to do a half hour on Comedy Central or Netflix, so I never got that opportunity. So
yet.
I figured like
you never got the opportunity. Well, yet. Yeah,
you never know. But if I just kind of figured that a lot of half hours are about 22 minutes. You put in commercials and you know how fast paced our society is now. Right. This is 24 minutes of me doing a material. And the last track on the album called The Bumblebee Conundrum is something that, like, I tried to do and it never felt right. It never felt better than that night. So it's like, it was just like, I'm going to leave it on there. It's kind of dirty. Like, as far as, like, it's not as, like, pristine as I wanted it to be. And I think a lot of times, like, this, you know, the pandemic just made me think, like, oh, maybe I was being a little too precious about my stuff. Like, oh, I'm going to keep it to myself and I'm going to whittle this stuff down and make sure it's perfect. And I said, well, you know, let me just put it out there and then hope people, you know, dig it, you know, and not try to be so precious about it. But I think, you know, it was recorded a big chunk of the album was recorded, the night that Kobe died.
Wow.
And yeah, the night, so it opens talking about, the first track is opens about talking about me, talking about Kobe and then what he meant to me. And then, maybe like around through like the third or fourth, you know, and then, so that part is recorded in New York City, the night Kobe died. Another part is, recorded at the Borgata Casino and Resort, which like I did that show in a packed room, which is like 800 people, and that was like a really, and a lot of them were white. And so I'm glad that I picked that bit to put on the album. One was recorded at DC, a couple were recorded at DC Improv, the title track Failed Running Back. And that we don't know if that club is going to exist anymore after this. So that's special too. And, the last track was, recorded at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. Which is in the vintage lounge. It's in the basement of the main room. And it's my favorite place to perform in New York City. My favorite place that they let me perform. So it's kind of like my lab where like that last track is kind of experimental. Me just like trying to figure something out and just, having a good time, you know.
And then so I think this is how many years of stand-up you've been doing?
11. This is like year 11.
Yeah, and so 11 years in, and then you make your first album, like, because, you know, I've been telling you make an album since we've known each other, basically. I'm just like, man, burn that shit, put it out, like, you never know what's gonna happen. And I know you always kind of felt like you were waiting for, like, the right time or whatever, yeah. But I'm always like,
yeah,
bro, you, like, it'll be another time. Like, it's just like, you get the first one out the way, and then it's like, yo, I wanna, okay, so this is what go, it's a learning experience, even if, no matter how it turns out, you know what I mean? Like, best case scenario, everyone loves it, it blows up, it's whatever, but to me, it's like, you're really building a resume of material the whole time. And with, unfortunately, with stand up, like, unless somebody's gonna come see you, they don't know, like, oh, this motherfucker's actually really funny. Like, you know what I mean? Cause even like, especially for you, even what you do on the podcast isn't really you doing stand up. You know what I mean? Like, it's totally different. So, like, I can see how somebody listens to the podcast and they're still gonna be blown away by this, cause they're gonna be like, oh shit, this motherfucker's really funny.
Right.
I think that's what happened with one, like a mutual friend, like in the community, and he DM'd me, he's like, yo, I didn't know you were this. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that means, you know, it's cool. So I think people will get a side of me that they haven't seen before. And I think it'll surprise a lot of people that I got some bars, young.
Cause you're not one of those people that really is on all the time. You know what I mean? Like, and by on, I don't mean on like, for the layman listening, I don't mean on like he's not always funny. I mean on like he's not always like doing like whacka waka, like, here's my bits. Like, Chris will just have a regular conversation with you without the pressure of like, how do we make this funny? It's, oh, this is a trash episode. We talked about Better Call Saul and we didn't make a whole, but
Chris is somebody you talk to and then he'd be like, hey, I'm a comedian. You'd be like, oh, what?
Right. You're like, what? This nigga funny? Yeah. And then, but like I said, when you're having that album is that, like, that step, like, boom, I'm funny. And then, did you have Andy, aka Alkaline, work on the sound and stuff for you, or like, what'd you do?
Yeah. I commissioned him. He's my Bob Power, if you guys get that reference.
Bob Power, you there? Hello.
Yeah. So I just reached out to him and he cleaned it up. First, like, I mean, I used Randolph and Andy as my brain trust, just saying like, hey, this set. So it started with this set that I did at Subculture on the night that Kobe died. And I gave it to Randolph and Andy. I said, Randolph, what do you think? He's like, that's a good set. Take some of the Kobe stuff out. And I was like, yeah, okay. I was like, yep. I see where I understand where you're coming from. And I edited. I chopped it up myself. Mm. And then Andy just went over the sound and I got their approval, because if they said no, then I wasn't going to put it out probably.
And knowing working with audio for the podcast, that probably helps your skill set too with chopping it up and stuff as well, right?
Yeah, it did. It did. I did better than I thought I would on it. And it was just kind of like it was a good learning experience. And I think it's just, I'm really excited to see what people think. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised. It's not like, nigga, I'm the next Pryor, but it's just like it's some of the best of me.
Right.
Like, it's like, I think it's like one of the best things that I've ever done artistically. So it's interesting, because it's like, you think like, if you're in the mode of, I'm recording an album or I'm doing this set for TV or, you know, those big moments, like doing the Black Guy Who Tips Live, like that was a special for me. Mm-hmm. So that's what I just prepared. Okay, this is my Comedy Central, Netflix, whatever. This is, I'm going in. Nice. And so I just kind of try to go with that intent of like trying to do well. And I think the last year and a half, I've kind of turned a corner in my stand up to where like there's certain things like kind of coalesced. Mm. So I was just like, that's me being on for all those, for, you know, those tracks. So it's like 24 minutes of me not letting up. And yeah. I didn't know that was going to be on an album. That was just what that captured. And so it was just something that I was like, well, I was on. So it can go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Chris, how have you seen the comedy landscape just change in the few months since the Rona been out there? Like, cause I know, you know, it's community, everybody chit chats and talk. Like, how have you seen it change?
You're seeing a lot of people do Zoom shows and a lot of people trying to, I don't fault them. I just don't know if it works for me. It's just like, well, I got a podcast, but you can be entertained through that way. But it's almost like how a lot of comics use it, like shit on YouTubers. Mm-hmm. They say like, guys are lame, fine. They're not doing. And now everybody is transitioning to that and doing some form of it. So it's I don't know how long that's going to last. I don't know that that's sustainable, mm-hmm. but I think maybe if comics come into it showing and exposing different aspects of themselves, and then when we open back and that people would like, and then when we get back to some form of normalcy, then maybe more people will come out to see everybody. But it's changed a lot. It almost seems like this pursuit, almost any artistic performance art pursuit, is like, God, that doesn't mean shit. What have I been doing for my whole life when this could be taken away? But I think I just take solace in the fact that I feel like I've been doing what I was put here to do. It doesn't make my journey better or worse than anybody. It's just how I fit as a person in the world. Like I can be my best self when I'm, you know, acting or doing comedy. You know, when you find your path, I think I've just gotten solace in that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I hope I answered that question, Karen.
I think you did. And I got a follow-up question. Do you think that these changes will introduce a new audience to comedians? Because me and Roger were talking about it. Me and Roger go school. We like to actually go and sit in the audience, and we love that interaction between the audience and the comedian. Like, we love that. You have a generation now, they don't go to the clubs. Like, that's not their thing. You have a lot of people that go, and even to today, it will be like, this is my first time seeing it live. And you get a completely different experience live than you do over the internet. How do you think people that are like, my whole thing is YouTube, all I do is Twitch, like, it's a generation now, like, that's how they were brought up. They weren't brought up kind of traditionally the way comedy, which in my way I prefer. So do you think it's going to be difficult for comedians to adjust to tap into this new audience? Because this audience is not going to go away.
I don't know. I think, you know, during the time I've been doing it, it seems like there's people that are our age and older. You talk to somebody after a show and they're like, oh, this is my first time going to a comedy show. And they're our age or older. So it's like, it's always going to be somebody's first time probably. So I think the live experience is better. Mm-hmm. Even your favorite comedian, sometimes when you watch them in a special, it's kind of seems like some of the piss is taken out of it, for lack of a better term, where it's just kind of like, it's really good, but it's like something's kind of missing. So it's almost like it's a magic to it. And I think, you know, what makes the experience so great, it's a communal experience. It's meant to be like a person on stage, a man or a woman on stage, and an audience, and you have this interaction, and it's nothing like it. I remember, even like from the theater standpoint, I remember going to see a Broadway show a couple of years ago, and one of the ushers said, hey, make sure you turn off your show. Make sure you turn off your phones before magic time. Mm-hmm. And she was making like a little joke, but it's true.
Yeah, it is magic. I think also, like, what might happen is you may have people who weren't going to the clubs that hop on some of these Zoom things, get some comedy through the internet, and then once everything opens back up, they may be like, oh, well, this is another outlet of entertainment that I wasn't really paying as much attention to, but right. You know, because I mean, how many people now are like, you know, how many podcasts, anyone got a podcast suggestion?
I've seen anybody that got a lot, you know, more than before,
right? So you gotta figure, yeah, there's gotta be some people kind of being introduced to this, or if you're on like a mailing list like I am with the Charlotte Comedy Club, like I'll get a I'll get like an email like, hey, we're going live Zoom show Friday, you know, hey, we're live in 15 minutes with so and so. And so it's like, you know, the clubs are trying, and yeah. I'm sure it's difficult for them, because like, even if they sold me a ticket to a live Zoom show, it's different than selling me drinks, you know, some wings, yeah, or whatever stuff. So I do think that's gonna be different, but also I feel like this is an opportunity for people to like blow up, you know. I think,
yeah,
people putting out an album is smart right now. You know, people that are starting that podcast, whatever, it's smart to, yeah, at least get it out there so people have something to consume. I mean, what I would do if I was a comedian right now and I felt like, you know, I'm trying to blow up, I don't really have anything, I would get my iPhone, start doing Trump impressions, and put them shits on Twitter, you know what I'm saying? And then,
yeah,
that's how,
yeah,
I've seen that work for people, you know, and next thing you, yeah, know, you're on Howard Stern. So I would do that.
Yep. Yeah, I think, you know, it's, you just kind of look at, you can kind of witness a lot of the ingenuity that some of your peers have. And, you know, with our friend JL, you know, it's almost like it's about not quitting too. Mm-hmm. Like it's, a lot of it's like about not giving up. And cause I'm talking to JL, like he's like, oh, I got to move to Jersey. I'm like, I live in Jersey. I'm right. Working.
Yeah. I was talking to my mom on the phone, the night before our podcast. We were just doing some setup stuff, and she listens to the show. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, you know, like, oh yeah, I was thinking about this person and that person. She brought up JL. She was like, yeah, I'm really, mm-hmm, happy for JL. You know, he's been going at this for so long, and you know, it's starting to blow up for him, and he should be happy now. I said, no, that's not how that works.
That's not how JL works.
She was like, she was like, where does he live now? I said, New Jersey. And she was like, well, he was always complaining about New York, so he's probably happy in New Jersey. I said, no, he just will find something new to complain about in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So he was complaining about, you know, the commute and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, that's kind of his thing, is going to always be a little bit miserable or whatever. But the thing you brought up earlier is the most important part. It's not just the not quitting, but it's the consistency.
Yeah.
Cause it's a lot of motherfuckers. When I look around at the creative landscape, it is a lot of people who should quit. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, like, they should.
Like you look at it and you're just like, you don't even really give a fuck about this. Like, I'm not saying quit if you just because you're not getting traction, but if you don't give a fuck if you're not getting traction, I really don't know what you're doing. Like, you could be doing anything, but when someone gives a fuck and they're consistent, my belief system is that it always does pay off on some level. It might, mm-hmm, not be as big as they would, you know, hope for it to be, but you know, you're gonna find that audience, but you can only find them if you have the material and the work ethic.
Right. It's just, I think consistency and not quitting is the thing, because I mean, I went to school with a lot of people, like in conservatory, like in grad school and whatnot. They're not doing it anymore for whatever reason, but they stopped. And then, you know, you think like when your own parents are like, oh, you're putting too many miles on your car. You're not getting paid doing, mm-hmm, stand up. Now I just sent those niggas some King Crab claws from, mm-hmm, from fucking Seattle.
Go on and eat mother's good, nigga. You welcome. Comedy paid for these crabs.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's just, you have to, yeah, it's just about keep going and knowing that, you know, if you're not hurting anybody.
Right.
And, you know, you're not doing anything malicious and you're following your path. Well, you can get there. It may not be what you want. I didn't envision this shit when I was 12, 13 years old.
Right.
I thought, you know, like I was telling somebody, like, you think like, oh, when I was younger and hotter, I, I thought I would be getting more parts.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm schlubby and I'm getting parts and you know, people are checking for me and, you know, I'm getting opportunities that I, you know, didn't think I would get, because I thought Broadway, getting on, being, having a show on Broadway, being, you know, I didn't think that would ever happen.
Right.
I thought that was just something that happened to other people, like my friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a big deal for me too. So it's just, it's about, you can't quit.
Yeah, you gotta listen. It's a gateway to flexing on your parents. That's what I always tell people. Like,
ain't stunting on your parents, what is you doing with your life?
Doing it till you can flex on your parents. You know, a little light work. Like, oh, I got the meal tonight. Okay, I don't know what you thought. I don't know what you thought these pockets was doing over here.
Yeah, that was a good feeling when we could go out and be like, you know, hey, everybody. We got y'all.
Right. Like, these jokes is working out a little better than you thought, huh?
Come on!
I remember we was in the car. Hold on one second. I remember we was in the truck. We was on the truck on the way back from my dad helping me pick up I think maybe it was a washing machine or something. And, we was on the way back, and this is when I first had got laid off, and Karen was like, we gotta try to do the show. And he was like, you really, I don't know anything about this. But you sure? You know, like, you sure you could do this? You sure you want to do it? I said, I don't know if I could do it, but I know I'll never be able to live with myself if I don't try. You know?
Yeah.
So that was like, you know, that was if in my movie, when Craig Robinson is talking to Denzel Washington, that's what's going to happen. Like, he had to tell him that.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, that, I mean, it's, now I wanted people to think, oh, he balling, but that's just like,
nah, it's a flex. It's a flex, dog. It's okay. Let it sit. Don't, I know the popular thing right now is to hate the 1%. Mm-hmm. None of us are rich.
I'm not a one. I'm in an apartment right now.
Right. None of us are rich here, but it was a slight flex. Okay.
Yes.
It was just one of those things where, cause this is what happened. So I wanted to get, then my mother was telling me about like her niece had gotten, like, her husband made her crab legs for Mother's Day, and my mother's like, I want some. And I had gotten them like candy scent from somewhere, and I was like, oh, let me just hop on the computer to see if I can get Red Lobster delivered to the house. And I took their order and sent it. They never got it. They never got the food. So apparently, like, I don't know if you and your listeners ever had a problem with DoorDash or anything like that, but it was like nobody. I tried to call Red Lobster, nothing. DoorDash couldn't do anything. So I just like called the bank today and just, you know, disputed the transaction, right. Got my money back. Okay. But I was so angry that I went on this site. I don't know if I should broadcast. Anyway, I went on this site and got like crab legs from the Fisherman's Wharf in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Whoever lived, you guys. Anyway, and it was like a good, it was like a Pike Place Market. Yes, Misfit
Noir. Yeah, we've been there.
Yeah. And so I got it shipped from them. So they'll get that tomorrow. Mm. And I was just like, let me do something extra nice and flex on all my cousins. But I told my parents not to tell them.
They don't like it. They don't like it. I be getting to the money. Everybody, man. Yeah. They don't get too much money. Everybody, man. Yeah. Same old niggas from the block. Same old niggas from the block. Same old niggas from the church.
Hey man, sometimes you have to flex on your parents, man. It's nothing wrong with that. They've been flexing on you your whole life.
You ain't got no McDonald's money.
Do you have McDonald's money? No, but you know who does? You do. Every time I bring McDonald's up in this car, guess one of us does have the money. It's always you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, this is just like, I've saved money from not using Easy Pass every month.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. But no, it's just one of those things where, like, cause they're, oh, maybe you should compare. My mother would say, and they love me. Maybe you should come home. Maybe you should come home.
Mm.
So it's like, well, not this time. I'm not, I'm not there yet, but you know, who knows what'll happen, but
yeah,
a lot of it, when you get that adversity and you overcome it, sometimes you do have to think about where you come and what you've accomplished. So it's kind of, you do have to pat yourself on the back and just keep grinding, you know.
Nothing wrong with that.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. And Chris, it's the small things. I remember me and my aunt, we went down to what's that place down there in the South Carolina that we love to eat, the fish place, you know what I'm
like
talking about. Captain Steve's.
Okay.
Me and my aunt had went to Captain Steve's, and this is one of my favorite aunts, and she has always done like great things, and she's all like, she is like a superhero to me. And we went out to eat, and me and her literally fought on who was gonna pay for the bill. And it was one of those things where I tricked her. What I did, I walked from the table and I went to the waitress. I was like, don't you take no money from this woman. I pay for the bill. Cause I was like, I want to stun on her and let her know, you've been paying for meals for me since I was a kid. It's my turn now, you know, and that's how you feel. My turn.
My mom, I feel like she got everything. So
everything.
Every time I try to surprise her with some shit, it's just a waste of money. Cause it's like, oh, I got you this Brita filter water, and it has like an electronic signal that tells you when to change the filter. And she's like, oh yeah, I got two of those. Let me put this in the closet with the other. I'm like, oh fuck. But Karen bought her a tree or something. Like, not like she went to 1-800 flowers and got a tree or something. Like, it wasn't even just a flower. It was like a
I was like, what is something she ain't got?
Like a bonsai tree or some shit. I was like, what? It's a flex though, but you know, we stunned on my mom for Mother's Day. That's what we do over here.
That thing was a few feet tall.
Yeah, I think like my parents, I guess that's our love language. I mean, you want to do, like, I bought you this thing. Not to say I bought you this shit. It's just like, I bought this for you because I love you. Like, I sent my, like, sent my parents groceries and stuff, and they would be like, you know, like Instacart type stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they were like, oh, how much is it? I was like, I don't know.
Right.
I forgot.
Yeah, it's on me. It's okay. Y'all took care of everything for so long. You know what I mean? Like, this is nothing. Y'all,
right.
You know
this
what
is
I
a drop in the bucket.
Like, I'm not a real, I'm a failed running back, not a real running back. So I'm not going, I can't like buy you a house, but I could definitely Instacart you some groceries.
Yes, I can.
You know, let me take care of that. Hey, so Chris, like, how are you getting by in the Rona? Cause I know New Jersey got hit real hard.
Yeah, I have a day job, so I'm not famous. Still have a day job, and that has become like, I'm actually blogging in more hours, and it's kind of become, you kind of see like how much you really, I've seen how much I really am valuable to that company. Not to sound like an asshole, but it's like, with some of the things that certain people ask you to do, where it's like, they should know how to do it,
right?
Or, you know, and I care way more than I thought I did. It's not even because of the pandemic. It's like, hey, we need to get this shit done.
Right.
What are you guys doing?
It's like as a self-respecting employee, you have a certain standard, and it's just like, oh yeah, I guess I really do give a fuck if the customer gets this on time.
Yeah, I give a shit. So that becomes frustrating. So that is something that, as far as you're talking about mentally, that's something that kind of, that keeps me going. So it keeps me like, that's like this, a sense of normalcy that I can just say, well, I got to log on and I'm doing this. I've accomplished this and I'm plugging away at that. And I got a check coming in. And, so that, as far as that, that's cool. Not going outside is kind of rough. Like I'm a homebody, but you know, you hear a lot of people say, I've been preparing for this my whole life, but it's just, it's lame. Cause what we do is, you know, we want to connect with people. We want to go out. We want to, you want to feel like I want to go to 7-Eleven and not feel like you're in like The Last of Us or Walking Dead or some shit. Like you just want to be whatever we thought normal was three, four months ago, you know?
Yes, yeah, it's interesting because, I, you know, I'm an introvert, but I'm not antisocial, you know, which I think a lot of people are finding out the difference. You know what I mean? Like, It's like, I might not, you know, I'm the kind of person that I don't want to go to a club or something, but I definitely go to a restaurant a few times a week or, you know, go play basketball, talk to the fellas at the court, that kind of shit. So it's weird not having that as a outlet and as a, as like a thing that you do every week. So, it definitely changes things. And yeah, it does give you a weird intense feeling. Cause when I go out, I pay attention to them rules, man. I do wear the mask.
Yeah.
I do try to keep my distance from people. I do all that shit, man. Cause you know, and the thing is, my new porn is watching people, not do that shit. Like when you look online, like every day now, there's like a news article. It's just like 500 people in a Texas park had a party and it was a shootout and nobody was wearing masks. And that's my new, like, oh my God, these motherfuckers are sick. This is like,
yeah. it's like watching last night's episode of Insecure. Like, they're too close together.
Yeah.
I gotta forget this was pre-Rona, because I was like, they having this big ass party with the Rona.
I went out Saturday
to get takeout for the first time in a while. And it was like this taco place that I like. They're in a mall normally, but they moved. They have like their pandemic location in another town, like 20 minutes away. And I was looking at how many people. It just seemed like it was a normal Saturday. Ain't nobody had no, people ain't had no mask on. They was at the strip malls. I was like, what are y'all doing?
It's crazy, man. We went to the store. If we go to the store and there's too many cars in the parking lot, I'll be like, nah, I can wait. Like,
we go early in the morning with the old folks that's concerned about their safety. And I told Roger, I don't know what it is, but about 9 or 10, the dummies get up and they like, you know what? Let's go to the store. And they don't do shit.
Yeah. It's not 9 or 10. It's not that. It's like, afternoonish is when it's like, if you pull up on the afternoon, cars are there like nothing's happening. Like, like it's just normal. Like, yeah, going to the grocery store. I was just like, am I the only one that has the news in the house and radio? Like, did the thing in your hand, the phone, does it only work one way for you? Because there's all the smart people are being like, put something on your face. Don't go to crowded places. Don't hang out. Stay 6 feet apart. And it's just motherfuckers out here like, yeah, I feel what you're trying to say, player. But I'ma still got to play basketball. I got to work on my jump shot on these niggas. Like, I don't get it.
Like, what's wrong with you?
I saw somebody tweet that in Florida, people were protesting outside of a gym doing like pull-ups and or like push-ups and sit-ups in front of a gym to protest the gym opening. They wanted it to open.
Right.
What?
And like, you know, it's like, couldn't y'all have done that at home, you know?
Even when I see people that are obeying the rules, if they get a little too loose with it, I still look at them like, I don't know about that. Yeah. Like, we'll see, like, there was like three women working out in our parking lot of our apartment complex one time. We went to check the mail. And you could tell they were like really fit. Like, they were people that probably go to the gym all the time.
Yeah, this is why driving them nuts.
The camaraderie of the gym, I'm sure, is a big part of it. You know what I mean? Like, they were like their Instagrams were popping. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could tell. And they were all like working out like just about 6 feet apart outside and just doing like synchronized exercises. And I still remember being like, I don't know about that shit, nigga. I did that by myself. The Rona might be out there amongst y'all.
And Chris, the funniest thing is we went to the grocery store and it was the cashier who actually had a mask on, but he was determined to be the most talkingest ass cashier ever.
First of all, he liked my shirt because it had Shannon Sharp on it.
He yelled across the
and it said Miles with the Yak, and he was checking some other person out. We weren't even in line.
Mm-mm.
And he just yells like, hey, sir. I looked up, he said, I like that shirt, man, thumbs up. I was like, okay, man, all right.
And he was loud
when he did it, he pulled his mask down, and I was like, now why would you have to do that? Like, just keep, what's the purpose of the mask? It's not like, it's not a removable thing. And then, so then we got in line and his checkout thing was the only one open. And he was, telling me about how much he loves Shannon Sharp, and hates Trump. I think it was another, it was like everyone in our line felt like he was playing it cool enough where everyone would agree. I felt like I don't think there were any white people in line and no white coworkers over there, so I feel like he was safe. But he was just so openly like, man, you know, because Shannon, you know, see, you got to be able to articulate what you trying to say, you know, that's why I mess with Shannon, you know, because Shannon, you know, he knows how to say it, unlike some people, you know, in the White House like Trump. And I'm just sitting here like, man, bruh, put your mask back on. Just check us out. It's not that serious.
Yeah, he talked to the lady in front of us for a smooth 10 minutes.
Yeah, she came back.
Yeah,
she didn't even have no mask. I was like, what is happening? What is happening? Read the news, everybody. So that's my new thing, is that's my new, like, obsession. My pet peeve is these motherfuckers not paying attention, man. But I'm glad that, you know, you're still safe up there and shit, because, you know, there's a lot of shit going on out here.
It is. It's like, everywhere that where I work, it's crazy. But like in Westchester County, where I live, Bergen County, where I work, you know, in New York City, it's like every place, but this is like the metropolis and everything. So it's just like, man, I'm getting, you know, so it seems like things are kind of tapering off a little bit, because at one point I was not able to get groceries delivered. Last week I did, just to try it. And it did work, but I think maybe, you know, I'll try, if I need to get groceries again, maybe I'll try it, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But
yeah, I had a similar thing where I got groceries one time, and then when I went to go order again, the shit was like, cause I just put like, you know, whenever y'all can do it, you know what I'm saying? Like I paid a little extra fee and y'all just do it whenever. And after that, man, I couldn't get groceries delivered for like a week or so. And I was like, like, I don't know if they on strike. I don't know if the shit is down or whatever. I was like, I can still go to the store. I was just trying to, you know, follow the rules as much as possible and stay home. Yeah, but
I think a lot more people are actually using the service too. So I know a lot of people in other parts, I've seen people in the chat sometimes say that they try to book groceries and it was like, you can't find a booking sometimes.
Yeah, that was what it was with us. And then also you have this thing where they start shopping and they can substitute things. They have this other thing where like, some asshole people are putting high tips on the thing, but then when they actually get the delivery, they take the tips off, which is really fucking everybody, because
you should be able to do that.
I agree. So all right, let's get into some other stuff, guys. Okay, I feel like you gotta go get Fail Running Back. Okay, I pre-ordered it already. All right, I pre-ordered this. I pre-ordered you know, Fireside Craps the Deuce Part Two, the Deuce, and I had pre-ordered ordered Old Mike B's Promote Mike B. And I'm just saying, like, people that we've had on the show, guests, comedians, talented people, we don't ever tell anybody no bullshit, period.
Mm-mm.
So like, you know, we have so many people that have come on the show, and if you go check them out, I mean, whether it's Roy Wood Jr., Janelle James, Chris Lambert, JL Covan, even Mike B, obviously Andy Klein with Vintage, Randolph Terrence with Blue Magic, Tim Miller, Rule of Third, like, it's like these are not just bullshit, like us promoting just anything. So hopefully you guys go check this stuff out, man. I always love to see that screenshot when you know, somebody is trending, you know, that number, oh, I got my album up to number one or whatever, in the comedy stuff. So go pre-order it, because that helps a lot, man. All right,
it does.
All right, go ahead.
We gotta get Karen. Is Karen,
she had to switch her internet. Yeah,
before we move further, I gotta get you to wax poetic on The Last of Us. So
I'll tell you what, that's two things. You just reminded me I had another thing too. So how is the Rona affecting the dating stuff, or is everything still the same?
So it is coming out June 19th. It was supposed to come out on my birthday, February
23rd. Well, yeah. I said, how is the Rona affecting dating for you? Like, is it changing anything? Is because now you can't meet up and go out on a date, but I heard people still be on them apps and stuff.
Oh, like I talk to people, women on Instagram. I shouldn't say that.
On the IG? Okay.
You know, like message some women, but I'm not dating anybody off of the, like now, no. Right. Like most of my life, my adulthood has been like, the woman comes around, it's great, then she leaves or I lose interest one is like there's one chunk in the EP that's about one woman. So it's mm-hmm. like that I turn, what is it? Big Crit said on a record, he said, like, turn my anger into green. You can call me Bill Bixby. Mm-hmm. I turned like some, like hurt. Like I was messed up over that girl because it was like a long stretch where it was just a girl that I briefly dated and it was just like, and I was like, oh my God, what can I do? How do I process this? And I have this chunk that's about a girl. So it's almost like it's not really a Cry Me a River. I know we black people we're not supposed to like Timberlake. I'm trying to think.
We like Future Sex Love Sounds. I mean, I think that's pretty universal, whether you like Timberlake or not. It's not like niggas R. Kelly, we gotta pretend we don't like his music.
Yeah, it's like, that's true. You just let Janet Jackson,
yeah,
her titty in the wind. I'm trying to think, but it's just like, it was something, it was cool because it was like, I really appreciated, I'm proud of that chunk of the EP, of those jokes, because it just helped me like process it. Like the bad thing happened and I was hurt as a man. Mm-hmm. I was hurt by a woman. and then
you didn't become an incel. Like you didn't.
Yeah, I didn't become an incel. I turned it into something, to make people laugh. So, I think there was a couple of women that I was interested in, and things were probably, maybe things would have happened before the Rona, cause it was set up that way, but it just didn't, you know.
And with the, with the Broadway stuff popping off, the acting stuff popping off, is it one of those things where it leaves like less time, or is it one of those things where, I'm out meeting more people because I'm doing these things?
There's no time. There was like, if that show was like, there would have been no time. Mm. It would have just been like to just go to work and do the play and then maybe get to do some stand up on the weekends, like late shows. But, there were women that I was interested in, but it's just like, I need to meet new women and not like women from the past.
Okay.
Cause it's some women from the past. It's like, that I never got this shot with, or they maybe didn't like me as much as I liked them. Mm-hmm. And then it was still like, it was some vibes thrown at one night after a thing. And it was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Are you fucking? So it's, I don't know. I'll be forever alone.
You done gave up? Don't give up.
I had that too though. I don't be knowing. I can't tell when someone's flirting or not. So
he can't, he can't. You know,
could he tell with you, Karen?
No. I asked Roderick on a date when we were like 16 and he turned me down and went back to play basketball.
Yeah, it took the other guys at the court had to be like, damn, nigga, someone asked you on a date. And I was like, well, she just wanted to go to like a play or something. They was like, nigga, that's a date, man. Why are you playing basketball? Yeah. So you'd rather be around musty ass niggas playing basketball? They was like roasting me. I was like, what? Yeah. Y'all are right. Y'all are absolutely right.
He ended up calling me back.
Yeah. Like we ended up going out. Man, I'm glad that those niggas roasted me.
So no, he don't get it.
I'm not going to be too pessimistic, but no, it was things that was like, oh, maybe these are some opportunities. Maybe blase blah. I just kind of like when that thing happened, like a few years ago, it was just sort of like, well, I'll just devote myself to my craft and getting good at that and, finding like more self-worth and affirmation and more like validation from the stuff that I'm doing. But even still, it's still, there's still an emptiness. Like you achieve these things and stuff. And I forgot to mention earlier, one of the, like there's like a couple of like, I guess like achievements and watermarks in my career where it's been like, I was briefly in this, movie, Can You Ever Forgive Me, with Melissa McCarthy. And when that came out, I took my parents to the movie theater to see it. And like the look on my mother's face when I came on screen was just like fucking incredible.
Right.
Like it blew me away.
Right.
And it was just like, and it was even, you know, if you see the movie, a nigga was on there for like a minute or so.
It don't matter to her.
It was sick because both of them, I always say they put me on the playing field. Like they gave me the tools to do what I needed to do. So they always put me in the red zone and all I had to do was like execute. I mean, and that's, you know, and like, and looking back on that, like that's pressure. That's a different type of pressure, but it's also like surprising to me because I think when you're in it, like I think the listeners can understand this too, where it's like, when you're in something and you prevail, you almost, you kind of figure out that you're stronger than you think you are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Cause there's always like this, you always have this self doubt and you just have to like try to overcome it. But it's like, it's one of those things where that was a moment where like, I was like, wow, this is real. I need to really cherish this because the thing that I said that I was going to do when I was like 12 years old, I did it. It's not on a scale that I would like it to be yet, but it's an achievement nonetheless.
Right.
Like I had this, you know, I had this like small part on this Broadway show and I don't know if it's coming back or not, but it was just like to start out as a kid in Southern Maryland to be on the stage and just to come that far is just like amazing because I thought what it would be was like, oh, now I'm in this Broadway show. Maybe I'm joining the actors union and then the actors equity for stage actors. And then maybe I can be in the mix for other projects. So that was like the achievement. Like I was just like, I want, like as an actor, you want your SAG card and you want your equity card. And so like I was on my way to getting the equity card and all that stuff. I'm being long winded, but it's just, I just feel like, I'm just getting started at 40 years old. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just getting started. You know, I feel like a lot of people like in my community, like you guys and a lot of our mutual friends are kind of just getting started, you know, and it looks different than it did for people that we admire, people that came before us. It's a little different. And I think some of the things that I was chasing, I was like, I felt like I was just chasing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing that I was chasing wasn't the same as it was for my peers who were ahead of me.
Yeah, I think, shit changes real fast too with technology, man. Like, also like the shine comes off of shit that was a big deal because the industry changes, you know, like, not that it's not a big deal, but especially with stand-ups, like you always hear them talking about certain things like, The Tonight Show. These are good milestones. I'm not knocking these, but you know, The Tonight Show, you know, 30 Comedy Central half hour, stuff like that. All cool stuff and all that, but there's other ways now. Like there's no gatekeeper. Like the gatekeepers on that don't control the whole fucking playing field anymore.
Right.
So, you know, you can get a viral Trump video. You can have a dope podcast. You can, you know, go through, you know, like I said, Broadway or whatever. You just don't know. And, I listened to Deezus and Mero one time being interviewed by Larry Wilmore on Black on the Air, I believe. And he was asking them about how they got on kind of at Showtime and all the stuff. And they basically was like, it's never been that we had a lot of people fucking with us. It's, the people who fucked with us just happened to be the right people. You know,
right.
Like I'm the person that decides what kind of show goes on the air over here. I, you know, let me go and advocate for these two dudes. Yeah. And next thing you know, they're on Vice. And then, you know, another, someone at Showtime that has some pull goes, oh, those guys are really funny. Boom. Now they're on Showtime. It's not like, you know, they had to like petition and get a whole lot of people to move with them to do that. But yeah, I was just thinking like the same way you talked about comedy though, I feel like that's the same thing with romance. Like, you can't give up. You got to always be in the game. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think I'm good. I've given up because there were certain things that I'm like, oh, wow. I've got a little game.
Yeah.
It's like Nas says, I don't have, what did he say? He said, I don't have a game.
Just some bitches understand my story.
Yeah. So I just think like a lot of times my whole life, I've just been that person that was, you know, career oriented and trying to, you know, fit that path. And like I said, there is that emptiness where it's like, oh, I did this cool show that I tried to get on and I made this milestone. It would be nice to share that with somebody other than my mom and dad.
It's a fine line between hopeless and hopeless romantic. You know what I mean? I feel like it's not hopeless, but it's that hopeless romantic feeling of like, oh man, I like eternally pining for just like these experiences to share with other people. And I think a lot of people have that. You know, nothing wrong with that. Last of Us. One of the greatest games I ever played, period, hands down. Karen surprised me with a PlayStation 4.
I did.
Last year.
Oh, it was Karen that bought it. Okay.
Yeah, because that was the trick. What I did, I ordered it through, he had it on his like Amazon wish list, because you know how we have our own Amazon wish list that me and him share, that periodically the fans order, you know, and send us stuff. So he had that on his wish list, and so what I did was that I ordered it, and when I ordered it, I didn't put like a message or anything with it, and so I wanted to surprise him on the show. It came earlier than I thought. So, when it came, he opened it up and I didn't say anything. He was like, who got, I was like, I don't know. I'm just as shocked. I played it off real good. I'm just as shocked as you.
I couldn't believe, I thought a fan had got it. I was like, we got a rich fan? What the fuck? Like, apparently. She's stunning on me. I loved it. It was so good, and the control scheme was so different from other games like that. Like, it's not like a run and shoot type of game. It's very much like challenging, and you gotta make every shot count. Some of it was a little arbitrary, by like, which I mean, you kill enemies and like they give you enough ammo no matter what, but just enough, like they never want you to feel like you walking into any situation over prepared. And as a person like me, the way I like to play games, I like to over prepare, you know, like when I play Tomb Raider, like I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go make all the arrows I can before I stomp on these niggas. Like, I don't want to be reaching for an arrow and be like, fuck, I got to make some arrows. Like, I don't like that.
And that's the thing. Like, I kind of feel like, and I think maybe you're experiencing this because I think you're playing Uncharted now, but like, it's like Lara Croft and Nathan Drake. Lara Croft, I think for the most part, will always be greater than Nathan Drake to me, because Nathan, like, Uncharted is a little more campier. And it's more cartoonish and it's fun. And you'll see in part four, there's really cool set pieces and all this stuff. But with The Last of Us, it's like, it's so grounded that it's just like,
fucked up shit happens in The Last of Us that doesn't happen in Uncharted or Tomb Raider. Yeah. Like when you go in the sewer, and some of the stuff they're clearly doing to set the mood, like, and to tell a story, like they want to tell a story more than they want to make you play a fun game. And so they're like, when you go in the sewer and you basically see the remnants of what was like a kid's, like kids were down there, there was like school, there was like toys and shit, and then you like basically walk through the mystery of what the fuck happened to the people that live down there, and you find like that, you find like this one room where like they left a note, but it's like the the kids and they were starving to death and they were locked in their trap with those monsters.
Aww.
And the person leaves a note like, yeah, so the if we don't make it, you know, I'll make it quick for the kids and then I'm gonna take myself out. And it's just like, fuck. Like yeah. That, like so many moments like that in that game that are just like, holy shit, this is a dark ass world, you know? So yeah. I loved it.
It's so fantastic. So it's just almost like I'm starting to think, like, with what I've seen from part two, mm-hmm. I think Ellie might be better, young.
We'll see, man. Ellie, than Laura?
She might be better than Laura Croft or Nathan because...
Well, she's definitely better than Nathan. That's not close.
Because it's more like, because Laura Croft and Nathan, it's almost like on some impossible white man shit.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, they're going to get through it. Mm-hmm. But with Ellie, it's like.
Well, I think they're just completely different types of games. Cause like,
yeah,
stuff in Uncharted and, Tomb Raider is a little bit more like, we're gonna show you the way to go. This is how, like, there's times in The Last of Us where, you know, I'm stumbling around for like 20-30 minutes kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, so where am I heading in this place? Like,
yeah,
okay, I'm on this campus, what, okay, this door, there's like stuff in here, but that's not the mission, you know what I mean? Or and right. and it's kind of like, it feels more like real life, how, you know, you go somewhere, it's not like, you know, if I got dropped off at an abandoned school and they said your goal is in the school somewhere, I would be looking in every door and fucking being careful and quiet. And it really does right. build atmosphere. It's just a well done game. And I the remastered version is just, you know, outstanding. And then of course, Left Behind was just probably, one of the most gut wrenching, DLCs of all time. I can't even believe they put that out just because it's mostly gut-wrenching than it is fun.
Yeah, there's somebody that said, yeah, you guys gotta put some more Naughty Dog's an incredible studio, but they're like, you gotta let some black people live.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it's like you make these great characters, but you killing all the niggas.
Yeah, what's going on with that? I did notice that. I was gonna text you that. I think I may have, but I was like,
I thought I sent you
like a DM that was just like, this little black girl's gonna die, isn't she? Like
oh man, I think you did.
Because I definitely sent you one after the brothers. I was like, man, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
I was just starting to like them adorable niggas, and then boom, like, I hate that shit.
But you know the part where we're losing your whole audience. But
just be all right.
It's our show. What are they going to do? They're stuck in the house.
They ain't got nowhere to go. Yeah, we going to talk.
It's so hilarious, the part where, like, everybody, like, the soldiers are coming after them, and Sam and Henry just, like, leave.
Yes.
Like, they leave. And Joel, it's like, yeah, they left.
That felt, like, authentic.
Yeah,
these niggas don't know us, okay? I only know that this is a good white man because I've been playing as him for 8 hours up until this point. Yeah. These black people just met this white man. Now they're like, oh, good luck, white people. And they just dipped.
Yeah, good luck. Peace.
And then when Joel got mad, he was like, bruh, I have one mission. I am getting my little brother back home. I don't give a fuck about this shit.
Now, what did you think? Because I want to ask you, because you're a reasonable person. And I got a lot in a lot of arguments about, not a lot, but like 6 or 7 years ago when I finished it. What did you think of the end? What did you think of like the end in the hospital?
Oh man, I loved it.
Did you take anybody out?
I took everybody out. What are you talking
about? Yeah, yeah.
Listen, okay, bro, let me tell you something, okay? When I step up in a building and I got a weapon, everybody's dying, okay? I don't play that shit. Cause I don't leave no loose ends. The only time I don't kill people is if they put it in the game by design that you just can't kill them people. Where it's like, three people ran down the hallway and you have to duck in this room or else you die right away. Then I'll duck in the room. But if it's just like, you know, a nigga out here whistling, taking a smoke break, oh, he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. Cause people were trying to act like you know, and I know what the studio is doing, and I have an mm-hmm. idea of what, because I, like a psycho, I went through all the leaks and the plot mm-hmm. leaks and stuff, and a lot of them aren't true.
Right.
But like, with what I've seen and what I know about the first one, it's just like, no, your mission is to take this little girl. You lost your daughter
right.
10, 15 minutes into the game. This girl is your surrogate daughter. You right. love this girl. You're right. going to do whatever you want to do, whatever you can to make this, to keep this girl alive. Is it selfish? Maybe. But yeah. you're saving it.
But I'm like, John Q. You know what I'm saying? I'm like the okay. Denzel movie, John Q. Cause Denzel was on this Universal Healthcare way before Bernie. Okay. People sleep on that, but he.
Take my heart. He's the guy that can do it. Take my heart and, fucking, you know, give it to the
kid. So I was in there. I shot the doctors up cause I thought if I leave them alive, these motherfuckers, they'll get Ellie again, and then they gonna be like, we got the same experts to do the operation. So everyone yeah. had to go, bro. Everyone had to go. So I hated killing all them people that, you know, like that was minding their business. But bro, you shouldn't be working for an evil organization. That's on you.
And you think Ellie at the end knows, right? He knows. She knows that Joel's lying, right?
Yeah, she gotta know. She had that look on her yeah. face. That was so cool, man, because I thought yeah. they were going to do something totally different with that ending. That was a yeah. little bit cliche. I was like, oh, okay, so then, you know, I thought we would end the game as Ellie, and that would be it. Like, and now Ellie's yeah. on her own. But nah, that was cool. I can't wait for part two, man.
Now, are you playing day one? Because, like, I'm going to have to – I think what I'm going to do is try to finish it that first weekend. Mm. I'm gonna try to finish it.
I don't know if I'll play day one or not, just because I never fucking know with my video gaming. I never know. Like, yeah. I don't really schedule time for anything. I just, if I'm in the middle of something, I'm a completionist. So if I'm in the middle of something when it comes out, I'll probably finish that and then play it next. But if I'm done with something, then yeah. So, you know, right now I'm playing through Uncharted.
Either way, we'll have a conversation about it.
Absolutely.
I just got like I've been talking about this YouTuber, shout out to the homie, Tajay Moment, mm-hmm. Who's a great YouTuber, and he's been kind of coming under like some fire because it just makes me angry because like the young black YouTuber that's like rising and doing his thing, that's the guy that the white people are singling out because he's having fun and he's enjoying the game and it just pisses me off, but he's really good at what he does. So I'm going to hopefully just try to talk to him too. Like I want to try to finish it so I can like really like have like a postmortem about it. But either way, you and I'll talk about that shit eventually.
Absolutely.
I think that's another thing like in the pandemic that's like forcing me, like keeping me excited, like that childlike energy and excitement for like a video game, even though I'm 40, right. But it's just like, hey, like this is really exciting. It's getting excited about like stuff like that. And then certain artists that I like that are releasing music and stuff. So
yeah.
I think that's something that's keeping me going, but I think I will try to get a PTO day on June 19th. So,
Juneteenth.
Juneteenth, man.
Okay.
Taking this white girl to get some revenge, bro.
Killing some more blacks.
Yeah. Fun fact, she will kill some more black people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fun fact, the woman who played Marlene, Merle Dandridge, I did an episode of Murphy Brown with her in 2018. Mm. And she graduated from Roosevelt University like years before I did. And I didn't even get to that. But I first, when I said, hey, Merle, you were in The Last of Us, right? Like a nerd.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, weirdo. She was cool, but she was just like, I told her, I was like, that's the best game I ever played in my life. and she was like, okay, nerd.
Yeah, that was like the time I played basketball against Baron Davis. And, when we lost to his team, cause he was just so fucking good. Oh, but, yeah. But like we barely lost, like between my brother, his friend and me, like we was in there, but we lost the shit to him. We lost maybe two or three times to his team. And so after the second or third time we played them, he came over to me after the game and was like, "Hey, big man, you got some good moves, bro." And I was like, "Oh, for real?" I leaned in real close. It was just like me and him. And I was like,
"Yeah,
bro, I have your poster on my wall right now when you ducked over KG."
What did he say?
He was just like blank face, like stood there for a second, and I was just dapped him, was like, and he was like, "That's what's up." And that was it. But I was just like, I don't know why I had to tell him that, but I just had to tell him, like, "Hey man, like, I appreciate the compliment, but my nigga, you dunked on KG in his grill and it's hanging up in my dorm room right now as we speak."
Dude, sometimes you have to give people their flowers, man. Life is so, like, fleeting, and you have to, like, I was lucky enough to have Van Hunt on my podcast, and, like, he's, like, one of my favorite musicians, and it was just like, "Yo, like, you, that song," it's like that Chris Farley character on SNL. It's like,
"Yeah,
remember when you made that song?"
Right.
"Remember when you
did
it?"
Oh, man.
And I had to tell him before I started the show. I was like, "Look, man, there might be a couple moments where I have a fanboy moment." Right. Yeah, there were probably several, but it's like, "Hey, man, you're dope, so deal with it." But, you know.
It was crazy, too, because when we played against Baron Davis, the only thing I kept thinking was, like, "Don't get blocked. Don't get blocked." Because he was blocking people's shit above the, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, pinning that shit, all embarrassing, like. So
yeah,
I was taking everything to do to fake his ass out. So that's why he thought I had some good moves, but it was all fear.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, shit. Has he done like all the smoke or Knuckleheads yet?
I don't know. I know he got his own show. What the fuck, Baron Davis?
Oh,
I love
it. That show is fucking hilarious.
Oh really? Is it like on YouTube?
It's on Hulu. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, y'all should all check it out. They're only 15, about 10-minute episodes,
and it is great.
But they are amazing. Karen, are you gonna say something?
Okay. Yes. Yes, I was going to say, Chris, I'm going to be playing video games until I die. So don't be worried about playing video games and being old, because that's something that me and Roger Powder going to do forever.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I play like cute and games I can kind of check out of reality. So
yeah.
I play shit like the Animal Crossing and like Farm Together and Stardew Valley. Like that shit I play. Like you want to talk about nerding out, I tell you how much I nerded out on Stardew Valley. I nerded out so much that I started going to the message boards. Like this is when you get real. I started going to the message boards. This is when I was like, "Okay, Karen, you are actually a bigger nerd than you think you are." I started going to them because I was having problems doing certain things. So I started going to the message boards and getting tips and tricks on how to do things. And then I found like a web, because in Stardew Valley you build your own farm, but then I found a website where you can actually do a layout of like your whole farm square by square and then duplicate it in real life. I was like, "Ken, I think you are in like really, really deep." So yeah, so no, I'll be doing this forever because it brings me joy.
All right,
Karen, I do it too. Like I'm on YouTube looking at these like Last of Us like commentary, like what people are saying about part two, who's mad about it, who's a cuck, or I just found out a new term called soy boy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this whole new world, and it's like it's a lot of negativity and bullshit, but like I do the same things that you do. Like I find myself spending time enjoying YouTube clips of stuff, like interesting things. Like I'm brining some chicken right now, mm-hmm, because I'm going to do John Legend's fried chicken recipe.
Well, I was going to say, on YouTube, man, I fuck with that Supreme Dreams. I think it's RDC World.
That's hilarious.
The funny black guy.
And that's nerd shit, but that's niggas. Like,
they
nerd shit, but it's also cool. So I think nerd shit is just the culture now. It's not even I need to be embarrassed that I brought up this nerdy shit. Like,
no.
Everybody's into this nerd shit. Now Marlene was probably like, "I made money from doing that motherfucking role. Like, you goddamn right. I know people like it, you know?"
she's like this hot, elegant black woman, and she's like, she was just like, I like it, cause you know, it's still like, you get these parts on the show, and you still know, like, there's a hierarchy.
Yeah.
But it was like, in between scenes, I was just like,
but when, like, that Last of Us check hit, she know what it is, dog. She know it's gonna be people like you for the rest of her life. That's like,
forever.
Oh, you was Marlene. Yeah. Like, that's just what it is. Ain't nothing nerdy about that at all, man. All right. Yeah. We gotta do some coronavirus news, guys. All right. It's time to move on. With coronavirus news, I try to find a song every time I put in coronavirus into Spotify search, and today's song is by, I don't remember if I played this or not, Problematic. Have I played this yet?
I don't know.
Okay, Coronavirus by Problematic. Let's see if we've listened to this yet.
This coronavirus global pandemic, it's invincible, and I think that makes it the scariest thing in them all. It could potentially kill millions if we don't get a stranglehold.
Okay, is he rapping, or he's just gonna tell us about what coronavirus is?
I don't know. Yeah.
A virus is defined by, you know, get into it.
We must all unite. Look, I'm quite concerned for my mental health. Head down to the store, no stock in the shelf. Just panic and fear as we cry for help. Don't tell me no heaven when we living in hell. Time is running out, need a vaccine quick. Get it for a doomsday, then the violence hits. Bill Gates foreseen in 2015 said the microbes killed us in World War III. No guns involved or nuclear weapons. Whoever would have thought be a virus spreading. Fix it to the people, live it out. Every second right now would be ideal. Start counting your blessings. Innocent die, watch them drop like flies. We waited too long when we could have saved lives. Incubation period, quit scary, no lies. Dear God, have mercy, keep praying, oh my. We're all in a recession, hope it's not too late. The best thing we can do right now is isolate. The government is promising so much to us. The media will sabotage the hottest stuff. Self-quarantine, self-quarantine. Better practice social distance, stay away from me. Self-quarantine, self-quarantine. We're all in this together, do not be naive. Self-quarantine, self-quarantine. Better practice social distance, stay away from me. Self-quarantine, self-quarantine. We're all in this together, do not be naive. Tell us that the virus transmitted from bats. Maybe it's true, or they lying about that. What if they're behind this epidemic crisis? And the government's got them feeling lifeless. Conspiracy theory, don't hate, don't judge. Even speaking my mind, always here to show love. So I'm not taking this matter serious. Choking online must be delirious. Medical supplies, they could really bow by. They say don't be afraid, military stand by. Tell me what's next in the line, Donald Trump. You said China virus, you ignorant. Wait, I'm not politically correct. I just hope we make it through these tough times, yes. Economy is crashing, never could imagine. Fight it for my freedom, serve and protect. We're all in a recession, hope it's not too late. The best thing we can do right now is isolate. The government is promising so much to us. The media will sabotage the hottest stuff. Self-quarantine, self-quarantine.
I fuck with that, actually.
I like that. And that sounds like somebody did his research, because on the low, he like telling you and spitting facts and giving numbers and statistics.
Sound like his favorite artist is Eminem.
Yes.
Like,
it's what the kids call a bop.
Yeah.
It's
I like a lot of the like trap. The trap ones are to me are my fave so far. I like the trap joints, but that one felt like like he took some time to make his. Like all my other people were just like, listen, what rhymes with coronavirus? And then they just started rapping over trap beats. His shit, he put some time into that.
He read a book.
Coronavirus news. Elon Musk defies coronavirus lockdown and reopens Tesla plant in California. Yep.
Why ain't nobody buying that Minecraft car you trying to sell? What is happening here? I don't understand.
3,500 Uber employees are told they are being laid off over a 3-minute long Zoom call because of coronavirus.
How do they lay people off?
I guess they had a call. They informed 3,500 people who worked in customer service and recruitment around the country.
Gotcha.
Yeah, not the drivers. That it would be their last day working for Uber on the live call.
Oh, so they like send out an alert, be like, hey, yeah, everybody log in.
I guess so. Just hop on the Zoom. Got a message.
Yeah, probably that's probably gonna happen more frequently now with everybody work from home. They gonna be like, we not gonna waste the time.
Uber's Ruffin Chevalier was tasked with breaking the news that the app was eliminating thousands of jobs on the call. Apparently, she said, our ride's business is down more than half. There's not enough work for many frontline customer support employees. As a result, we are eliminating 3,500 frontline customer support roles. Your role is impacted, and today will be your last day working with Uber. You will remain on the payroll until the date noted in your severance package. Her voice cracked. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was just saying, at least they get a severance. That's good.
Yeah, and they've been cut, like, upright, because, like I said, people ain't been moving around. People ain't been traveling. You know, and a lot of cities still got locked down, so ain't nobody going nowhere.
Her voice cracked as she told the employees that no one wants to be on a call like this. She said, I know that this is incredibly hard to hear. No one wants to be on a call like this. With everyone remote and the change of this magnitude, we had to do this in a way that allowed us to tell you as quickly as possible so that you did not hear from the rumor mill.
Yeah, shit hit online and everybody was like, you didn't call us? You didn't tell us?
I also wanted to deliver this news personally and just take a brief moment to thank you for your contributions to Uber.
Yeah, because the thing is, with social distancing and things like that, this right here is going to be more of a common thing, because people are like, I'm not bringing you to the office and dragging you to human resources. We're not going through all that.
Yeah, and I figure that business got to be down, because who want to hop in a car with a stranger, you know, for however long, whether they got a mask on or not? Like, that's scary as shit. Mike Pence apparently is not going to self-isolate, even though he had an aide who tested positive for coronavirus. And that same aide, they have video of her when they went to go visit that nursing home coughing. She coughed during the visit.
Of course she did. And of course he did.
Yeah. So it was mixed messages at first that he would self-isolate at home. And then it was like he won't. Then it was like he came to work and he was in a room by himself at the White House or whatever. But like, nigga, are you not breathing the same air as everyone? Like, this
so crazy, dude. Like, I just finished watching that series, the Will Forte series, Last Man on Earth. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, later on in the show, they had like the death of President Mike Pence. Like, they just like all these people. Like,
oh no.
Like, if you watch, like, the first joint, it's like, the first episode, it's like, they say the year 2020, like a year or so after the virus, it's some, if you watch the first episode, they'll say, it's like, that shit is like, and people wearing masks and stuff, mm-hmm. It's like, they get to the flat, it's crazy, man, how, like, it kind of, it's essentially prophetic the way, if you look at that show. I mean, right. The show's, I think it's a solid show, but, and you know, you could say whatever you want, but it's like, they kind of, not predicted the shit, but it that shit is like, ooh, you look at it now, obviously.
Well, the Simpsons were good at predicting, because Roger played a clip where a doctor was telling the people, you know, there's nothing to do but to go home, and they was like, we're gonna give you placebos. They was like, where did we find the placebos? They was like, it's over here in the truck. And they went and shook the truck, and the boxes on the truck said killer bees, and all the bees came out and started attacking everybody,
the murder hornets. LA inmates are trying to infect themselves with coronavirus to win early release. Yeah, because we have overcrowding in the jails already, and
they're
letting people out who have coronavirus. So people is like,
they're licking shit, and what are they trying to do to get it?
They're like, cough on me, man, breathe directly into. I'm trying to get the fuck out of here. You know, I get it. You know, it's prison. And I know a lot of us understand the pressure, because we can't even be in our house without breaking rules.
Right.
Motherfuckers are already ready to go risk their lives at house parties and shit. So if you was in prison, I know you probably be trying to catch the Rona.
It's just so crazy, man. It's like a lot of, like, when you think about, white people feel like this is like just such being inconvenienced for some is like a death sentence to them.
They never felt no real oppression.
No, they have not.
Yeah. They just anything bad happens to them, they be like, is this oppression? Is this tyranny? I was going downtown for a march and it rained and they said the march was canceled. Is this what slavery feels like? Is this slavery? You're like, no. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about because nothing bad has really ever happened to you. So
not all white people.
All of them have the privilege. Okay, it's not.
Kenan's got a series, so he might leave. So maybe there's a shot.
Yeah, we'll see. It's really more like not all black people, rather than not all white people. Like it's all white people that have white privilege, but it is a few black people that believe they got some white privilege. You know what I mean?
They really don't. They just believe they do, but you don't.
LeBron, why do you have to keep bringing up all of this racism? With people like me and you are so rich, there's no reason for us to bring up racism. It doesn't affect us in the same way. They spray painted nigger on your house, and I love painting. They spray painted on my house and I go right to work at Fox Sports and I don't care. You just want to be better than Jordan. You just want to be better than Jordan.
He made that heel turn and never looked back.
Right.
He never looked back.
Oh man.
That night, Jason. How do you sleep at night?
You know what I was thinking though? I don't really remember a time when Jason wasn't like, obviously he's cooned it up to a point where it's but I don't ever remember a time where I felt like he was advocating for us on any level. Like
not that I
just
remember
a time where he wasn't antagonizing us as much. I definitely remember that. But I don't think I remember a time where I read something from Jason Will. I was like, yes, that's what I'm saying, Jason. That's what we feeling.
He used to be on Sports Reporters, right?
Yeah, he did. I just don't know. You know how you can think of times where it's like, yo, this is when Will Bond was like, nah, you not about to do black people like this on my watch. Like every black journalist got that moment, you know, Jemele Hill, obviously, Bomani Jones several times, you know, Donald Sterling one was a great one. But, even Stephen A. Smith has had a couple, but I can't think of one for Jason Whitlock.
If you dig deep into the archives of my podcast, I had a really great conversation with this writer named Greg Howard.
Yes, I remember that episode.
Yeah, he was, when The Undefeated was starting, he really breaks down his relationship with Jason Whitlock and how he's just like one of those dudes that's just out of touch.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like this wealth or, where you just kind of forget, you know, where you came from and all this stuff. It's just, it's a hard thing to deal with when you're, I don't feel like it's that hard. It's just like, I feel like you, like as somebody who puts stuff out, like as a comedian, it's just like you want everybody to like you, but like, I feel like I'm at home when black people fuck with me. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I did this, like case in point, I did this show in Delaware, like in the middle of nowhere, Delaware, at this casino that I didn't even know existed. And I did this show and there were just really like two black people, in the crowd, kind of looked like your parents, Rod. Mm. And they were just like, they were fucking with me and I was like, oh, I'm doing well. Like I had a good set, but it was just like, I knew because those middle-aged black people that were like my surrogate parents, I knew I was doing well because they were fucking with me.
Yeah.
So like when you have that, it's like, and you kind of try to connect with that. It's not like a super active thing that you do, but it's just like, you just kind of want to be aware of that and in sync with, like what your people are going through and try to process that through what you do and what the content that you put out. And it's just a thing that I've always tried to be in tune with. I mean, nobody gets it right all the time, but I think it's just something that's I don't even know if it's another level of awareness. It's just something that I've always just kind of kept close to me.
Yeah, it's weird because I can't even imagine a scenario where black people didn't fuck with me. Like, yeah. I just can't even imagine it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, if anything, maybe that's the key to blowing up, is you get to the point where you be like, I don't give a fuck what my people think about me. I'm trying to get this money, and maybe, you know, for certain people, that's how they get their money. But I can't imagine not giving a fuck about black people to that point where I'm just like,
right.
Like, and at least I have my money tonight. Like that's nothing if I can't go to McDonald's and like niggas in there, like when Jason Whitlock rolls up to McDonald's, the niggas in there definitely have to be like, this month, here he comes.
This man. Why is he here? Why are you at McDonald's? Right. After that shake? Right. I don't know.
Why aren't you at Cracker Barrel, sir?
Yeah. It's one of those things, man. It's always been, and I think it's not, and I don't even look at it as a burden. It's just that awareness. I just think, like, I don't know. I thought I had a good point to make, but it's like not giving a fuck in the right way. It's just like, yeah. I'm going to do this and I care, but I'm just going to try to be my most authentic self and not really lose my blackness. It's not something it's like a lot of things that I felt like what kind of hit home with me, I guess, that episode of Black as Fuck that everybody references when they said, oh, I didn't really want to watch all the episodes, but episode 5 struck a chord with me. And it's definitely one of those things where, I guess, the Tyler Perry episode.
Black as Fuck.
Like where you're just kind of grappling with something and trying to figure out.
I think the thing is, there's a fine line, and I feel like I'm there. It's okay to not give a fuck about how everybody feels about you. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I definitely had to develop that, because there's a part of my personality that definitely wants to be liked by everybody. But that's impossible. And so that was me beating myself for something that essentially was impossible to achieve, which is fucked up, you know? So I had to stop doing that. And I think people mistake that for not caring about black people all the time. Like, when you've decided, like, listen, I am this way. I care about my people, I care about myself, but I have to preserve myself to a certain extent. I'm not gonna let this shit drive me crazy. But then there's another level where people actively go, the ire of black people and the distancing myself from black people is a payday.
Right.
And I can get paid while being the most mediocre, small-minded, selfish, backwards thinking, illogical person, you know, and people will respect it. You know, I saw something from Candace Owens basically defending the white people who killed Ahmaud Arbery, and I thought to myself, my first thought was, Killer Mike called this woman intelligent. Sat right there on the dais with her, talked about how smart and intelligent she was so that they could, you know, quote unquote, debate in front of people. And I just want to be clear, that's two different levels to me. Like, you know, like, I don't feel like Killer Mike is a coon or some shit, you know, but I feel like a Jason Whitlock, a Candace Owens, Dominic Silk, Ben Carson, like, there's a certain level of people where it's just like, I can't fuck with them because they're doing this shit to us on purpose,
right,
to make money from white people. And that's different that's different than feeling like, as a free black person, I'm not gonna let my blackness define my every single move and thought. I'm not gonna let what people think of me limit my ability to, you know, be myself. I think those are two different things, because I saw someone in the chat being equating some other people that I would not say don't care about black people. You know, Chris Rock, I don't feel like he doesn't care about black people. Kevin Hart, I don't feel like he doesn't care about black people. They might not care as much as some activists, or they might not make, just being black might not be their living, you know what I'm saying? Like, all I do is black shit and talk about blackness, but it's different between them and Jason Whitlock to me.
Oh yeah. Oh, most definitely. I think that goes without saying. I think it's just something that, as a creative, as somebody who gets put out in the forefront, as people in entertainment get put out more in the forefront than people that are actually really, really doing the real work.
Yeah.
I think you still have to have that, hey, there's black people looking at me and watching me. Cause I know, as a kid, like, you know, we were talking about on Reese Waters' show, how, like, you know, you think about Michael Jordan, he should have did this, he should have did that for the community. I loved Michael Jordan when I was a kid, and I still, you know, have this admiration for him, but I'll say it again, Aubrey Lamberth, my daddy, and Maddie Lamberth was they're my hero.
Right.
Because they're regular people, and they, in spite of everything, they rose to the occasion of raising like me, mm-hmm. you know? So it's just like, the more I feel like the older that I get, I remember like one of the best like experiences that I've had just being in the workforce was like, if you listen to my podcast, I always talk about this, theater camp that I worked at in Skokie, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, working with kids. And then, you know, right after I got out of grad school, I worked in special ed for kids with autism, and I worked with, quote unquote, I'm going to get canceled. The standard, I'm putting myself into a hole. General pop, gen pop kids. Mm-hmm. I work with all types of kids with disabilities, kids without. And it was like a rewarding experience for me because I worked at a before and after school program, and you would see these kids, and it made me think about my childhood, and it made me have a even greater appreciation for my parents. Mm-hmm. Like I always appreciated everything that they did for me, but it was just, I had this newfound respect for them.
Right.
Like my dad was working two jobs. My mother was working at the late shift. She would get home at 12:30 and they were putting me in the private school and shit, busting their ass. My aunt would pick me up and take me to school in the morning. The whole village, it takes a village type thing to get my black ass, you know, across the state, you know, in high school and stuff. So it's just like, you can't, to me, like, you have to have somebody else in your life, the people that are with you. And it's okay to dream. It's okay to want to be like LeBron or like Kobe or like Mike, but it's just like,
I think because of white supremacy, black people have been put in this weird situation, our whole existence of America, where our celebrities, we also want them to become activists.
Right.
Like, we don't want you to just be talented. We don't want you to just entertain us. We want you to then step into this void. And I think also because of the charismatic black male, legacy of leadership throughout, you know, the African American diaspora, and you know, whether that's true or not, not saying that that's been the only people that should be leaders, but the way that it's been promoted, we look to charismatic black men to be leaders when there's no fucking reason for us to do that. Like I never really feel too disappointed in most celebrities and shit because I never look to them for shit. I only am bothered by people that say shit that is fucked up about black people.
Right.
So like Jay-Z can't really disappoint me because most of the time he's just saying like his version of like, this is how I think black people can make it, you know. Doesn't bother me, you know. Now even with like a Killer Mike, who I disagree with on a lot of stuff, most of the time shit he say don't bother me. It's only when he started talking about black people and like doing something bad that I'm like, what the fuck, where'd that come from, you know what I mean? He's not an elected official or whatever. And same thing with Michael Jordan. I remember that shit. I'm in North Carolina, so I remember how much Jesse Helms is obviously a racist, how many black people around here I was obviously like, this nigga's racist. And at no point, even as a kid, even through my parents and whatever, did anyone around me go, I can't believe Michael Jordan didn't say nothing about Harvey Gantt. It was kind of like, I think what Michael Jordan knew is the lesson that Barack Obama didn't know, which is that they'll rather turn on you than turn on racism. So you know, Barack Obama was elected, he was one of the most popular presidents of all time. Soon as he came out and started talking about race and saying my son would have looked like Trayvon Martin, it was like, no, fuck this nigga. And that's what would have happened to Mike. Like, everyone has this, I think, and I think it's a black thing, we believe that there's a negro who they'll listen to, but that we have no evidence that that's true. Like, right. Martin Luther King right. got killed. You know what I mean? It's not like Martin Luther right. King quit. It's not like he said, oh, we beat racism. Well, I guess I'm yeah. retired. Like, they killed that nigga. So, you know, yeah. this idea of like, you know, all black people should be advocates, and if we get the right advocate, it will change America. Yeah. I just don't believe in that. I'm too pessimistic for that.
Me either.
And I think you're absolutely right. I just feel like you talk about Killer Mike and stuff that you wish you wouldn't have said, but also that motherfucker made this song called Ric Flair.
Exactly.
That made me feel like I could get up in front of these people that I didn't know and tell these fucking jokes.
Right.
Or jokes.
He's a, it's like all these people are a collection of ideas and moments and stuff. Nobody's the worst thing they ever said. Nobody's the best thing they ever said.
Right.
And I think right now we're in such a polarized time where like everybody's trying to make shit stick to the worst or best. Like, Chrissy Teigen, you know, like Chrissy Teigen had something racist happen to her essentially. And people was like, yeah, that's racist. That white woman was, why she singling out Asian women to be like, all these white women out here doing the same shit, but she only got a problem when two Asian women have made money that way. And then all of a sudden they were like, yeah, we agree. That's fucked up. Wait a minute. Remember in 2013 when Chrissy Teigen made a joke on Twitter that she did apologize for, but she made a joke about Quvenzhané Wallace. And guys, we have to now throw out all of the principled stances we just had and go fuck this woman as well. And that's kind of like, I try to avoid that because it's not, because that joke Chrissy Teigen made is not all of what she's about. And, you know, her best moments aren't all of what she's, everybody's kind of a collection in between. But there are some motherfuckers who just have bad moments all the time.
Yeah.
And those motherfuckers I can't fuck with. You know, like Candace Owens, like there's certain people that just, their whole purpose is to have the bad take. 100% of the time. So yeah, that's the difference to me. I've never held it against Mike. Low key, I don't hold it against Tiger Woods. I don't hold it against any of these motherfuckers.
Cause
I think if you truly respect race work, then you need to admit that it's hard work and thankless.
Right.
And a lot of niggas don't want to take it on.
Right. And everybody ain't built for that. And that's the thing. Money does not equal all of a sudden need to be an activist, because going by what people say online, they want you to be an activist with no money. They want you to be an activist and not make a living. They want you to be an activist and die broke. What is wrong with this? They want you to be able to march, to be able to go feed the homeless, to be able to stand up for our rights, to be able to connect us with the lawyers, to be able to do all these things that require money.
And that ain't freedom.
Right.
Like, that's not freedom when LeBron James has to be an activist. That's not freedom.
Yeah.
Like, that's just us putting another level of respectability on top of white people's respectability. And like, that was another thing that bothered me too, is whenever I hear like white people or non-black people talking about LeBron James should have said this, he should have done that. I'm like, what do you know about this life? You know, the biggest trick they had was, I think either this year or late last year, was China and the NBA, when Daryl Morey tweeted out some like free the people type shit and then disappeared off the internet because he knew he fucked up. Nobody even went to go find him to get him to talk about it again, because he knew he shouldn't have did that shit. And then people turned it into LeBron James should have spoke up for the people of China, or what is wrong with him, he's not. And I said, nigga, you are on ESPN, you're on ESPN talking about what this man should say. How about you say it? Tell me what he should have said. Tell me the message is worth burning your career down, is it not? That's what you're telling LeBron. So tell me, fuck LeBron, skip the middleman, you look directly in that camera and you tell me how China ain't shit, and burn all the ESPN bridges that y'all have built with China, all your NBA partnership, burn it, go ahead and burn it to the ground right now. Not a fucking word. Because at the end of the day, man, they want us to be the martyr for their shit sometimes, and I don't like that shit. Like, being black doesn't mean I gotta be a martyr. That, we need to get rid of that shit, man. If you just wanna be rich, black, and mind your motherfucking business,
you should be able to do that.
Like, I don't know why that's a fucking, like, why is that such a character flaw on somebody? That doesn't mean shit to me. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's just, what was so, I don't know, like, obviously, you don't have to like black as fuck, but it's just like, every fucking episode was titled Because of Slavery.
Bruh, it's and so I good.
I thought it was so dope because it was just like, yeah, why am I wearing this chain? Why do I care about this? Or why do I care about these sneakers? It's because of slavery. Why? I do feel something like I'm only going to, like when I was being precious about my jokes and stuff, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to record and I'm going to wear these Jordan 4s. I'm going to, because this is important to me, I have to put on these Michael Jordan sneakers because he was the best.
Yeah,
and I want to be like the best, and I feel like I'm somebody when I'm wearing these fucking sneakers. Why is that? That's something that I, no matter how wealthy you get, no matter you got, if you want to feel like you're mm-hmm. somebody.
Yeah, I love that. I love that it was a show that was it wasn't trying to make you like everybody, which is something that.
Right.
You know, almost, like, first of all, no, almost no black shows ever get to do that, right? Like, all our shit, you have to like the motherfuckers, right? Waka waka, hey, America, you know, like, so I like that it was a show where it was like, every character on here is flawed and a little bit insufferable. It's not a show that's really about black trauma, you know, it's more comedy based. And then also, like, it was a roast of himself and his kids and his family in a way that it was so funny, because like the woke niggas missed it, but this what y'all been saying y'all wanted, like this is the radical self-examination of that y'all pretend to want, and seeing him sit down there and be like, yo man, this is what's fucked up about me, this is what's good about me, this is like a raw honest truth about my life, about my relationship, this is, you know, this, like, he's the father that didn't understand, he didn't understand how his wife was loved so much by the kids. And that was the episode that made me love the show, was cause I was like, yo, I feel him on that, cause he was dealing with the duality of like, yes, there's sexism and women are dealing with this and it's fucked up. He even perpetrated some when they was in the meeting and he told that white woman she couldn't go see her kids, or he guilted her out of it.
Yeah.
But in the same episode, you know, he kind of broke down like these black father stereotypes and how fucked up it is, and how fucked up it is to give like all the credit for like the smallest shit, but then like none of the credit for the big shit. Like, it was just dope, man. Like, it was a more complicated, complex show than I think people were thinking, and I don't think, like, when people say it's like blackish, I didn't really think it was. I think this shit was more thoughtful.
It was like Arrested Development. Yes. I was one of the best sitcoms this side of the new millennium.
It was.
And you had interesting and weird characters just like that. And it's like that episode, I think it was that bowling episode, mm-hmm. where he had those Nikes that were like hazmat sneakers,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, he was sitting on the couch. He's like, why am I wearing these?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
I think my favorite, it reminded me so much of just like woke black niggas, was the one where he tries to explain the painting he bought to everybody, and he didn't even really know what it meant. He's just sitting there pontificating over, like writing his virtual think piece to everybody who would listen, dragging people over to it. And then at the end, the artist is actually on the show to be like, this is exactly what this means. And he's like, yes, that's what I was saying. It's like, no, you said something about gentrification. Like, I love that kind of shit, man. It was such
it's not gonna be for everybody. Like, most art isn't for everybody, but I'm not trying to come across as elitist because I like the shit, but it was just sort of like, it was like, there's some interesting things that he brought up, and it's like, it's like a person kind of grappling with these things in real time.
Dog, when he was like, am I a coon? And I'm like, bruh, as a black creative, bruh, that, tell me that's not the fucking existential struggle, is the, am I fucking up? Like, what, like, like when you, like when, it's like, white people like this too much. What am I doing wrong? Like,
to draw them here.
You know, I saw something black that everyone likes and I didn't like it. Am I fucking up? You know what I mean? Like, I love that shit, man. Yeah. And even the one with his family where they show like how regular, non-woke, non-in the fucking moment, not trying to like think piece everything black people, how like the disconnect between them and the people who often try to speak for blackness is so real and so vast. And that's why you know, every black person online supposedly hates Tyler Perry. And the fucking thing, you can't buy a ticket to the movies when them shits drop, because niggas love that shit.
We've been in Boo and Boo Too, and it was us and a bunch of black people.
So who are you really talking for? You know what I'm saying? Who are you really talking about when you're like, we as black people feel this way? It's like, do we really? Because last time I checked, Obama got a 97% approval rating amongst black people everywhere but Twitter. So like, what, like, maybe Twitter's the problem. Maybe Facebook's the problem. Maybe it's not black people that are the problem. Maybe it's us.
And it's all of it. That's all of it's not real. It's almost like when the Erykah Badu, Jill Scott versus thing, which was amazing, but there were some people that just had to let you know how black it was. It's like, we know it's black because they're black,
right?
And they're black women, so they're gonna make black music, and we're having a good time,
and we go have black jokes.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun, and it was just something how somebody said that was really interesting about that. Start to get off topic, but it was just saying
I dropped the topics a long time ago.
That's true. You know, your favorite guest is on, guys. Yeah. So we're
talking about what Chris want to talk about. Okay,
we talk about what I want to talk about. just how the this was the first one that I watched the whole thing. I think I watched the Jonte Austin Neo joint for the most part. But the women were like, oh, I love what you did. I love this song. Or they complimented each other. Mm-hmm. But I noticed while it was dope, towards the end is when they started throwing those haymakers at the end.
Mm.
Like when they started putting those songs up. Because it's just fascinating to me those two black women set a great example of how this show should be carried on.
Right.
It should, a lot of it, some of them seem to be a little antagonistic.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see all of them, but I think the Scott Storch and Juvenile was kind of.
I didn't even watch any of them really. Like, I watched a little bit of some of them. Hold on, we about to get cut off. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to, give me 1 second.
There you go.
All right, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
I didn't get Fresh, the sports that got kind of catty.
Yeah, I didn't watch. I haven't been watching them because for some reason it just doesn't do it for me. But I'm not. But I haven't been complaining about it either. Like I'm glad people are having a good time. Mm-hmm. Stuck in the house.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a different form of entertainment, but. I did watch some of Erykah and Jill, and it's mostly just that I think Jill Scott is so fine.
Ain't she fine?
So I think it was like, I was just sitting there watching basically her face for like 20 minutes. Like I don't know what songs are played. I didn't give a fuck who was in the comments. I was just like, let me just see what my boo is talking about. And I just, I'm just into Jilly from Philly.
Yes. They was playing all of the jams, cause I was kind of in and out. And the thing is, part of the agreement when they did it was, because I seen kind of articles, how people kind of talk about in advance, who's doing it next.
Yeah.
And their thing was like, we didn't want to be antagonistic. They was like, we're not gonna do it if we had each other's throats. They was like, we wanted to be a laid-back experience. We didn't want it to be a fight.
Right.
My favorite thing about it was and it's going on a few days now, but for a little bit, man, like social media, black people finally got the stick out of their ass and didn't bring up everybody's old tweets and problematic views and shit. They just like, oh, we just love these. Now I know it's mostly happening because it's black women, and so it's easier, but I like that shit. Like, I hope they can keep it going for stuff like that, because I hate when shit spirals into, and did you want, so y'all cool with the person that sang at R. Kelly's Rose, or like I'm like, come on, man. Like, people just we're stuck in the house. This ain't even about all that, blah blah blah. So it was cool to see people let that shit go for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And if they was out there, most people ignored them.
Yeah,
they always out there.
Right. So I thought it was dope, man. All right, let's move into a different segment, guys. Okay, let's talk about. I guess we do some fucking with black people, maybe though. Feel like we've already kind
we
of been.
Sorry.
You want to do white people news?
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Let's do white people news. We can do white people news. I actually have some specific white people news.
Yeah, it's my favorite segment on the show. And I like how when I'm able to catch the show that every now and then you might mention, oh, Chris Lambert's probably the only person that knows who these white people are.
Because I don't.
Well, I picked some today.
Yeah, I love it.
I picked some today specifically for because I knew you were coming on. So
okay, cool.
So of course I have to play the song first. So let me see what white people news song we have here. Okay, I got one. Now I will admittedly say I don't know shit about Rascal Flatts. I think is the white people.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, no. Like are they country music or something?
I have no idea.
Someone in chat
knows. So.
Somebody
probably knows.
Some of you blacks know. But apparently a black person did like a version of, I guess, the kind of shit they be doing.
I wake up in teardrops for my rain. Put on that old song that we dance to and then I head back to the, it's not much has changed.
All these niggas have on masks and they got just
okay.
In case.
I was about to say, we don't see them.
Y'all can't see nothing?
Mm-mm. We hear it, don't see it. Okay, it's slowly moving.
I see it now.
Okay, yeah, it's loading.
I've been hurt and fucked up too many years ago. Hoping I could come up quick along the broken road. Well, I hustled and found a plug. From the extra, show me love. Now I'm flexing in a wreck. They hating on me too. And every sleepless night led me to where I am. Bitches that broke my heart, they became hoes that scam. Show me a better way. Promise I'll quit this game. This much I know it's true. I came up and so could you. And fuck the boys in blue. Fuck them all. Fuck 12. Rolling money, act a fool. Who gets my proof? Brought my niggas, put them on. I promise I won't lose. I hustled and found a plug. From the extra, show me love. Now I'm flexing in a wreck. They hating on me too. And every sleepless night led me to where I am. Bitches that broke my heart, they became hoes I scammed. Show me a better this much I know it's true. I came up and so could you. And fuck the boys in blue.
Dramatic ass music with them holding guns. This shit is fucking hilarious.
That was amazing. Okay.
That's almost on the level of the what's my girl Vanessa Carlton.
Yeah. Nothing's gonna ever beat that dude. He killed that dude.
Nothing's funnier than that. Nothing's better than that.
Yeah, but that was up there. That was wow. That was amazing work. Those niggas where they look like some thugs, okay?
Mm-hmm. They was some harmonizing thugs.
They had guns.
You can't see
Yeah, they didn't even show their faces.
Yeah, they had guns, vests.
They doing steel shots.
Kill you.
All right. Let's get to this white people news, guys. Reese Witherspoon is in the white people's news.
I know her.
Okay.
That's one of them I can remember.
She says she is sometimes totally overwhelmed.
Aww.
Reese Witherspoon sometimes gets so overwhelmed that she lies on the floor and cries.
Hi, welcome to the club.
The 44-year-old actress and producer who has her own successful media company called Hello Sunshine admitted that there are days when she can't cope and she just bursts into tears. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'll lay on the floor and cry and I'll sit in the car and cry. Yeah, sometimes I'm totally overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. She said on CBS show Sunday morning. However, she insisted she will put in the hours because she wants to make the industry a safer place for young women. She said, I really want to change things. I see younger women in our industry and I want them to have a better experience. I want to see them, that they have a better idea, beautiful idea of what the future can hold. I will put in the hours and I bet on myself. I'm my own lottery ticket. And I always think that if no one else shows up, I know I will show up and I know I will do the work.
Come on through.
She also believes that.
Oh, man.
What is overload over there, Chris?
No, I'm sorry. I'll continue. I'm sorry.
Okay. Reese also believes that COVID-19 pandemic will completely change Hollywood, and she admitted she is already trying to figure out how to shoot love scenes while maintaining social distancing. When asked, you can't really shoot a TV show socially distancing, can you? The thing that we're most confused about in love scenes, we're like, how are you going to make out? We're just going to have to get creative. And Reese, who has produced projects including Big Little Lies, Gone Girl, and Little Fires Everywhere, revealed that she has Wild, another Cheryl Strayed. Who's that? Wild, author Cheryl Strayed, to thank for kicking off her successful producing career.
Oh, that was the movie she did where she was on that cross. She just like walked.
Oh.
Yeah. She was fucking, I guess she fucked the guy in the alley because she was on drugs or some shit. But good movie.
She was wild.
The Pacific Trail, says, yeah.
Yep. So she thanks Cheryl for looking out, okay? So shout out to my girl Cheryl for hooking up our girl Reese because she's a boss now. She making moves.
I fuck with Reese.
Mm-hmm.
I like Reese because, I mean, she was in one of my all-time favorite movies, Election, in 1999. So her and Kerry Washington have a place in my heart, like as actresses, because they were two pivotal movies for me. Like Reese in Election and Kerry in Save the Last Dance. I love those two movies and I love them. I thought Kerry, you know, it was great. It was just like, I felt like the two of them in Little Fires Everywhere was like Jordan versus Bird, like acting wise. Like they were like clashing I just love the way that they tackled racism, the racial dynamics, class dynamics in that show. You can kind of some people might pass it off as just like a fun limited series nighttime soap, but I fucking loved it because I love the way that we put herself in the position to be like this white woman who they now called Karens. You know, like she was like, I'm a white lady and I know this is like she put herself in that position and a lot of people don't do that. And I just liked how they just explored all these, the racial dynamics in that movie. I mean, that show.
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet, but you know, I always do.
I've seen the promotions.
I always do feel like there should be a special Oscar for white people who play racists in movies. Like,
I think it's
the true bravery of Hollywood now. Like, it's not brave to play a slave if you black, because like, the slave is always a good guy. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
white people can run the risk of Danny Glover in Color Purple, where they play the racist too good, and it's like, I don't never see that motherfucker the same again after that. I'm like, oh, you know, I was a big Paul Giamatti fan, man, but after 12 years of Slave, it's like, I can't shake the shit, man. He was too good. Right. You know what I mean? He's like, how much for this nigga? This nigga here is $45 here, $55 for this nigga. And I was like, damn, Paul's good. This nigga's teeth.
I get to do
with teeth like this, this nigga's only worth $37.50. Get the fuck out of my face. I was like, damn, this dude make me feel like he sold slaves for real.
I used to do a bit about 12 Years a Slave. It's like, it's the movie where you can see your favorite white actors say nigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you want to see Joe say nigger, this is the movie to see. And like, there's a part in the movie where Brad Pitt, like, well, where Magneto, whatever his real name is now, I can't, it escapes me. Mm-hmm. He was like, these niggers, blah, blah, blah. And Matt and Brad Pitt was like, hey, wait a minute. These niggers are human.
Yeah.
I think it's on YouTube somewhere. Yeah. If you go to like Chris Lambert comedy, it's like a YouTube clip from 7 or 8 years ago. Yeah. But it was just like, yeah, what the fuck are you? What?
Fassbender was his name.
Michael Fassbender, yeah. You know, there are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was such a racist in that movie. He was so good. He should have been nominated that year. He should have been nominated.
Leonardo
DiCaprio, obviously, in Django.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to say the sleeper in that movie is the white woman in 12 Years of Slave. She was even more racist. And that dude was racist as hell, but she was fucking Patsy up, man.
Ooh, you know who else? Another woman that should be nominated. I don't know the woman's name. The woman who played the wife in you play clips about if you get the right white man.
Oh, yeah. So you're talking about Spike Lee.
Did she play Martha Clark?
Say what? Hold on, I can't hear you, Chris. What'd you say?
She played Marsha Clark in that. Let me see. Are we talking?
No, different white woman. So she's talking about the Spike Lee movie with the KKK.
Black Klansman.
Yeah, and Karen's talking about the wife of the Klansman, the fat woman.
Yes,
she was amazingly racist.
Yes, she ought to be nominated because she was the one out of that role.
She was the one that came up with like the plan and shit. Like, cause the white man was like, how are we gonna get to these niggers? And she was like, well, I know I'm just a genteel southern woman that y'all keep telling to shut the fuck up and serve the beer, but have you thought about this? And it was like, you know what, honey? I take it back. I love you. Okay. I was like, damn, boy. White women evil, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of white women though, we're not talking about that. Madman star January Jones, 42. Shares a very skimpy bikini pictures to fans for all and thanks them for all the Instagram love.
Aww.
She's been sharing lots of sunshine filled bikini posts during lockdown, and January Jones was at it again on Instagram on Sunday. The 42-year-old who played Betty Draper in Mad Men posed wearing a skimpy black and white two-piece to thank fans for all their support. She said thanks and peace for all the Insta love. And I guess this is her.
Yeah, that's sweet. I still don't know who she is. That's sweet.
She was in the X-Men movies, playing the White Queen, I believe.
Also in Last Man on Earth.
Okay.
So,
I don't think I seen that one.
You did see the X-Men movie where she was in it. It was First Class, I believe.
Yes, no, I haven't seen the Last Man on Earth.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so she, set them girls out. Comedian Whitney Cummings wrote, "Lord, you're hot," straight underneath it. First of all, appropriation, Whitney. Okay, you ain't black. Don't be spelling Lord, L-O-R-T, okay? We're sick of it.
I mean, and if I could defend a white woman, okay. I will say...
In her defense... defend this Karen,
like dude Superman meme.
If I could just take a moment, because I don't think the white woman's perspective has been shared enough on this show. Whitney Cummings is a very good friend of blacks. Okay,
she is from the DMV, but it's still, she was from Georgia. I think she. She lived in Georgetown at a point, so I do not give her a pass, but I just still wanted to say, I still wanted to give y'all the illusion that I was going K-4.
January shared.
I like her, bro.
Shout out to all the people that just tried to pre-sold the album.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cancel. How do I cancel iTunes pre-sale? I suddenly
canceled their pre-sale.
January shared another snap on stories, this time wearing a gray tracksuit bottoms with her bikini top. This is another one with her wearing a mask that lights up, says Happy Mother's Day.
So they light up, now they're getting fancy.
Sounds like she's just having a good time. Like, she's in quarantine. Oh, that's her baby. Oh, look at them.
Oh, that's precious right there.
Yeah, so like she just she's
living her best life.
Like the rest of us, a picture of her and her mom when she was a baby. So yep.
She's just chilling. I think someone said they prefer Christina Hendricks, and I agree.
Is that the redhead from Mad Men?
That's the redhead. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
If I had to go, I love my people,
mm-hmm.
but if like white woman preference,
if you had to,
redhead, right. redhead. If I had one, it would be redheads.
Okay, I understand that. They like blacks and white people, so I get it.
Yeah.
January has changed her tone on Instagram during self-isolation from COVID-19 as she stays home in Los Angeles residence. In the past, she has posted photos where she was dressed elegantly for an evening out or to push fashion. But in recent weeks, the mother of one has taken to sharing pin-up bikini photos. On Friday, the blonde beauty recognized the change and joked, "I'm troubled by this. That what's become of me?" Oh, so this is her in the bikini. I mean, you the one hitting sin, boo. So, you know what I'm saying? Go on and get yours. We ain't judging.
Put them cakes out there.
You a white woman. Ain't nobody gonna make you feel bad about this, really. You know? Like, if you was like Lizzo or somebody if Issa Rae started posting nothing but bikinis, then of course they would have to deal with all the stuff that comes with that as a black woman. But, you know, you should be pretty good. Just standard sexism. Jones looked flawless, like she was in prime shape on the cover of Women's Health. She had a cute black and white bikini with floral pattern and retro feel, thanks to the high-waisted briefs and the ties on the front, on the top, on the sides of the bottoms. What? That's a real sentence. I didn't fuck that up.
Okay.
The X-Men actress added a black, pink, and white floral pattern sheet to cover up that the wind flowed in the wind. So.
Mm.
She is out here stunting on these motherfuckers on Instagram.
I'm not even mad.
Yeah.
She just kicking it.
Yeah. It's good to see white people doing their thing, man. You know? Like, in this pandemic. Let's see what other white people is out here. There's more whites that I saved for Chris. I think there was some starlets. Let me see if I can get my computer. Now my computer suddenly wants to move slow. So shout out to the Daily Mail, man. Emma Roberts, you know who that is?
Mm-mm.
Yes.
Karen, I'm never asking you. I'm always asking Chris.
Okay.
Why would I ask you? I know you don't know. Emma Roberts pulls together a double denim look with a very unusual jacket. Okay. Cool. Emma Roberts from?
Emma Roberts was in was she in an indie movie called Palo Alto, I think. That's the most, that's just the first thing that comes to mind. She kind of went there. She was in, this movie called Nerve, 2016. I'm looking around. American Horror Story, Scream Queen. Most popular thing she did. She did do like one of the, like, was she in Scream 4? I'm looking at her IMDb. She is a white star. Yeah. I'm trying to see.
Are you really?
She was in The Hunt.
She was in what?
She was in The Hunt, the movie that came out people got mad at. They shouldn't have been mad at it because it was a movie that was making fun of liberals. But, like, the conservatives got mad at the movie, so they postponed it. And then they released it during the at the top of the Pandemic for Rental. And it was actually a fun, like a funny movie that made fun of liberals more so than conservative folks.
What I think is
funny, it was a fun movie.
How do you feel about this? So I know you're into the white starlets, like, you know, like fantasy football, but.
Yeah, very much so.
Is the tentpole young adult trilogy like the real star maker for the white starlets? You know what I mean? Like, who gets those determines who's really gonna be the white starlet of the future.
That's a really good question. I think it's almost like it's a rite of passage, if you will, where like, what's my girl, Dakota Fanning? Was in this movie that came out on Netflix like a couple of months. It was an interesting movie, All the Bright Places. It came out on Netflix. It was kind of dark, and it kind of pissed me off. But she's one of those actresses that, like, she's very good, but she is going through that, like, cycle of, like, she's going through the system, if you will, where she's doing, like, she's done some indie stuff. She's going through, like, the big young adult movies. I don't know that she's done a trilogy yet, but.
Cause I feel like at least for a time, it was like, if you're not getting that Harry Potter, Hunger Games, I'm sure there's other
like
ones.
Twilight,
like that boost right there, that shit right there is like, you know, going to Duke. You know what I mean? Like, you hit the league running. When you start off with that, like, your ass is going to be somebody for a long time. As opposed to, you know, when you got to go from indie film to indie film, it's just harder to make it.
Yeah. It's like we talked about, like, with comedy and things, like the whole model changing. It's like people spend too much money on those big blockbusters. So now you're not seeing as much of those trilogies. I think, like, the Divergent series kind of flopped.
It did.
Like, you can't follow the what's my girl, what's Kat for Lawrence, it's not the same anymore. So what Jennifer Lawrence was going through is not the same as what Elle Fanning's dealing with now. So it's just kind of like, you get that if you've been in an adaptation of a big young adult book that's like just a one-off, then that's kind of good enough. Now, he or she says I hated that adaptation. And I'm thinking she might be talking, he or she might be talking about the
Divergent?
All the Bright Places.
Divergent.
I don't know. Okay. But one of the, like, this movie that she did with the light skinned black dude from, that Netflix 80s dance Pokemon movie.
I know that dude.
He's Wyatt Cenac. I just didn't like how it ended because I didn't know. I was just watching it and I was like, fuck. This happened. Fuck.
That's like every Netflix movie now. It's like the ending.
Yeah.
Like Netflix gives you about 90% of a movie, and then they get to the end and they just always pull up short. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's a different thing. And what I am liking is like these young black girls are getting the same opportunity.
Yes.
To do it too. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm enjoying now. Like I had a conversation with. I think she's somebody that got the Mundane Festival bump. Aisha Harris, who is now to be with Slate. She's now with the New York Times. And we were talking about, like, I know you guys kind of give me shit for liking these white actresses, but it's now you can actually track these young black girls' career and see, like, you know, how they're growing and what kind of projects they're doing. Like, my girl from Wade, oh my God. I just want to get her name. I just like getting these black.
Actually, you know what? While you do that, I got to Chris, go ahead. I'm sorry, man. We got cut off. I had to refresh.
I was just saying, like you get to track these young black actresses, and you just kind of like see like them progress, and you get to see them get more opportunities. Like there's this movie. I think it's called Selah and the Spades. That's on Amazon Prime. It's like a new, it, it came show and it's available on streaming. It's like all these young black people, and the most notable actor was the guy from When They See Us. What's my man from Moonlight and Jarrell Jerome or something, I believe. And you get, and these young black people are now starting to get more opportunities, so you get to see them go through, you know, more stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah, I watched a joint on Netflix that starred this black actress. It might have even been Taylor Russell, the one where she's stuck on the beach, that creature fighting that creature. I can't, maybe it wasn't her, it might have been somebody else, but that joint was good. It's like an hour and a half little sci-fi joint.
What's the escape room she was in that too? She was in the Netflix, what's the reboot that they did? Oh my God, you know it, Rod. I'll find it. She's on the Netflix show, the series that Lost in Space.
Oh yeah, I watched that. And I love that.
Yeah, and she's gonna be in like Escape Room Part 2. So she, you know, like it, like she is like to me, you know, like when you think about these movies and stuff that come out, like when I was 18, 19, I was watching all these movies that kind of like break apart the American family, like the American Beauties, the Happiness, Ice Storm, movies like that. And I was like, oh, why can't there be black movies like that? And we get, to me, I thought Waves fulfilled that for me. Obviously there should be more. But I thought, you know, she was great in that. And that was to me a star making turn.
The movie I was talking about is Sweetheart, and it's not her, it's not Taylor Russell, it's Kiersey Clemons.
She's great too.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, I get them confused, but that joint good. But anyway, okay. You keep trying to shift it back to this black shit, and I don't know why, because we are in white people news. So,
I'm sorry.
Good for these colors that they're getting jobs and stuff.
You see what I try to do, Rod's audience? That shifted black, and then
you said this is your favorite. Audience. This is your favorite segment, and then we keep going back to black things. I don't want to deal with the oppression of black people's careers trying to make it in Hollywood. It's too hard.
I thought I was losing some pre-sales for my album, so I had to shift.
You overcompensated. Okay, people. Now you're just messing up the show, Emma Roberts. Pull together a double denim look with a very unusual jacket. That's what we was talking about.
Welcome to my club, Chris. I do it all the time. And how do you wear double denim?
Emma Roberts.
Oh my God.
Okay, Eric Garcetti, the Los Angeles mayor, ordered all residents to sport a face mask while out running essential errands, and Emma Roberts adhered to that request while picking up some groceries on Sunday. The 29-year-old actress, whose aunt is Julia Roberts, did not know that.
Now I know that white woman.
Did not
know
that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She wore a denim-on-denim look and kept protected with a statement mask over her face. She stood in a white T-shirt underneath her multi-tone denim jacket. That's good for her. You know, like, jeans is so hard to pull off, especially in this weather. You know, like, that's bold. You don't see a lot of fashion forward choices like that by going retro, you know, with the acid wash look, you know. It's just, you don't see a lot of people making these type of choices in this pandemic.
No.
Okay. You know, especially, and when you have, like, you come from a long legacy of Roberts like her, Julia Roberts, to the niece, to Emma Roberts. I mean, maybe Eric Roberts is in there. Who knows? You know, is Eric Roberts related to Julia on any level?
I think so.
Well, it's always good to see that kind of stuff happening, because, you know, white people got it hard, man. And you know, if you can't just put on some jeans and go to town, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Her blonde hair was styled into a low ponytail, and she appeared to be wearing very little to no makeup underneath her mask.
Oh shit, doing natural.
And sunglasses. Okay. That's also interesting too, because like, do I need to wear a lot of makeup? And what? in the pandemic, number one.
Yeah.
And then two, with a mask.
No. And this is kind of related to white people news. They were saying that because people haven't been going to work and shit like that, I said makeup sales have gone down. They was like, because people's like, I'm not wearing makeup if I want to cover the shit up with a mask. I'm not what's one in lipstick and all this shit if it's gonna have a big ass cloth on it.
So apparently that proves every man ever right. Women weren't just wearing it for themselves.
No.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing women always say. I won't wear makeup for you, I wear it for myself. And now everybody at home is like, right. You know what? I disagree. I'm taking these bras off. And I'm not spending an hour in the motherfucking makeup to go be on Zoom. Fuck you niggas.
And that is the truth. And what's hilarious, not to get off topic, is when I see men talking about y'all women at home with y'all bras, I was like, oh, you don't live at home with no woman right now. Who the fuck is going to strap up a bra on and float around the house? For what? For who?
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. If there's no men around, you know, like, what's the point? If I don't have to go in front of people, I'm not doing it. So what's those sales dropped, you know? I don't know what makeup gonna do to get it back. You know? That's a long
Everybody's affected by this.
She also, the American Horror Story star's appearance comes after she shared a sweet tribute message to her mom on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day at Kelly Grace 1313. You're the greatest mama. So happy we get this life together. Happy Mother's Day to all the other beautiful out there.
Aww.
She's been practicing social isolation in her Los Angeles home with her boyfriend Garrett Hundlin, 35, amid the COVID-19. Most recently, Emma starred in the horror thriller The Hunt. The movie had, oh, well, we know it got pushed back. Yeah. Chris already told us that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, the upcoming release of her romantic comedy film, The Holiday, is now in limbo due to production delays caused by the pandemic. Well, you know, good luck for her, man. Good, you know, I hate to see her going through it like this, but it's good that she was out able to get shopping and put the outfit together, and she didn't have to worry about all the makeup and stuff that, you know, we often see.
She busting that double denim like a two-barrel shotgun on y'all.
Yeah, for those that want to see, I'll just do this. This is better than using my computer because my computer be acting stupid. This is her.
Let me ask you this. Is that the iPhone 11 Plus?
Yeah, it is. I had to stunt on these niggas. If we're going to be stuck in the house, I'm stunting. You know what I mean?
Like, Did you just get it?
Nah, I've been had this player, okay? This is old yeah, to me.
Tell me, can you and your listeners, the two of you and your listeners, what do you have, Karen? Do you have the same?
Yes.
I like the idea that I would be able to have a nicer phone than Karen is so ridiculous. You can't, like, how I'm gonna live in this house? We both, when I upgraded, we both had to upgrade. That's just
the
rules.
We sure did, even if I don't know how to use half the features. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys, what's the switch to iPhone from Android?
I you know what? I don't play those games. And we are talking about white people news, so I'm not going to get into that.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, well, that'll be like, we'll message each other after.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know nothing about Android. I've never had an iPhone.
Never
so
had an Android, so I wouldn't even know. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, bro.
Okay.
I'll send you some crab legs after the show. Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman shares a rare glimpse into her family life, cradling daughter Amalia and kissing son Aleph in a snap by her husband Benjamin Millipod. But black names is too much, huh? Okay.
That's what I will never get off of this. Y'all call babies apples, oranges, peaches, and pears, but y'all be picking on black people names.
She is known for being one of the more private Hollywood movie stars, especially when it comes to sharing moments from her family life. You know what? Natalie Portman, tentpole trilogy, Star Wars. I'm telling you, I'm on to something with this shit, okay? That was that she had the original Star Wars from Phantom Menace to Revenge of the Sith or whatever.
She did.
Yeah. So that was her like her white starlet turn, and now she's a fucking icon forever. She'll never not have a job because she did that. You gotta get the trilogy under your belt. Well, You had to back in the day. I don't know what the new trilogy is gonna be, but at that time, you needed that trilogy. It elevated you in an echelon above the regular white starlets. I'm telling you, I'm on to something.
She can do what she wants. She started with that. I think The Professional was the big break for her.
Yep.
94. And then she did, they got on her like earlier this year or last year where they were like, she was like, yeah, we need to have more women directors. She's like, they was like, you never picked one.
Yeah.
You never had a woman.
They was mad. But you want to know what's funny though is she came out and was like, actually, I have tried to get women directors. They've like, it's fallen through. Like they've had to do other projects. One was a woman director and she left in the middle. So we had to, like replace her with a dude or some shit. But she was like, but I like her response. She was like, but y'all right. I can do better. And so I'm gonna do better too. Like that was some real shit. Cause I would have been defensive as fuck if you would try to call me out when I was trying to pretend to be woke. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Plus the person calling her out was like Rose McGowan. And don't nobody listen to her. She kind of
fucked herself.
Yeah. Like she had a moment and then she like turned on all the other women like that was in the movement. And it was just like, okay, never mind. She's like, only I know about oppression. Shut up, Blackie. It was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. She used to be an indie darling, but she's not, you know, everybody can't be Parker Posey, but you know, there's only one Parker Posey.
She need a trilogy, man. Yeah. But on Monday, Natalie Portman couldn't resist posting an adorable throwback snap with her two children, an intimate portrait that was taken by her husband of 8 years, Benjamin Millipod. The 38-year-old is seen cradling her children, Aleph 8 and Amalia 3. And a picture below posted to Instagram account, simply captioned by 3 heart emojis and noting that the moment had been caught by Millipie, a dancer and choreographer. So this is the picture for y'all guys.
Ain't that precious.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. It make you even stop thinking about black people getting shot in the streets by cops. It'll just wipe it the fuck away. It's like, oh my God, look at this adorable white family. This is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a flashback from a few years prior as Amalia appears to be a baby in the shot. What do you mean y'all don't see it? I'm holding my phone up to the camera. That's what you gotta be looking at. Y'all can't see this?
I can.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sharing my screen because my computer is
whack. That's probably what they were talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully y'all see it. And then this is her and her husband right here. He's like a regular kind of regular degular white dude. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
He would get lost in the crowd.
A little bit like a herd. You know what I mean?
I think he was her dance teacher or choreographer from Black Swan. I think he met on the set of Black Swan.
Well, good for him, man. They look happy and in love. Look at how they're looking in each other's eyes. Like this is almost like a wedding photo.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Precious.
I'm just glad she's happy, you know? Like, after how Anakin did her, I didn't know she was ever going to find love again.
Right?
It was hard.
He was a deadbeat dad. I don't care what nobody says.
Mm-hmm. People don't talk about that, though. Let's see. What other white people are doing shit? Oh, our girl Kylie Jenner is in the news.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Apparently she cuts cake like a fucking psychopath.
What?
Yeah. This is a picture of some cake she cut to eat. Let me hold this right. If you can see it up there.
Why is there a hole?
Right?
What happened?
She look like Pac-Man.
Oh.
Who the fuck eats cake like this?
Is it rosemary on that cake? I'm confused.
That's one thing y'all can say she didn't appropriate from black people because that ain't us.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Nah, we don't do that.
She has left fans horrified, baffled, and triggered by how she cut a cake she received for Mother's Day. Oh, you did this to the baby's cake? Oh, my God. I know that baby was so upset. The 22-year-old showed off the mini bouquets she received for the holiday on Sunday, as well as the large olive oil cake that was delivered to her door. Olive oil cake?
What is that?
That's a new level of whiteness for me. I didn't even know you can make that.
Yeah. That's why I look like it has a big piece of rosemary on top of it. That makes sense.
Is it even sweet? What is olive oil cake?
I have no, it sounds terrible.
I've heard of soda bread. but I've never heard of olive cake.
What if it's just some bullshit where it's like really cornbread, but white people have to call it different? You know? Yeah. Like how they call roaches palmetto bugs. You're like, nigga, that is a big roach.
A big ass roach that can fly.
I know a roach, Tyler. But it was the way that the makeup mogul sliced it to the round cake, cutting out an uneven triangular sliver that angled towards one side rather than the middle that had fans buzzing. Kylie shared a snapshot of the cake on Instagram stories showing off the dessert dusted in powdered sugar. So I guess it is sweet. In the next image, she showed off how she had sliced into it, cutting out a small piece to eat. But Kylie didn't follow traditional cake cutting technique in which a person slices towards the center. Both of her slices angle toward the left, cutting a slanted triangle cake out of one from one side that would prevent further slices from being evenly cut.
Oh no. And somebody said that means that they, instead of the vegetable oil, they use olive oil to make the cake.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that everything else stays the same, but the oil.
That was weird. Kylie, sweetie, that's not the right way to cut a cake. The way Kylie cut the cake on her Insta stories makes me want to crawl out my skin. Kylie Jenner triggering the nation by cutting her cake the way she did. Why did Kylie Jenner cut her cake like this? She's a literal psychopath. Man, people was upset.
About a cutting of a cake.
Right.
You can tell people are bored and at home. Why did she cut her cake like that?
Well, white people, right? Black people was over there like, I don't want to see any more videos of black trauma. And then white people over there like, olive oil cake? No, I don't think so. Oh, I'm fucking disgusted. Anyway, scrolling past black people being killed, the sloppy slicing appears to have upset many people, so that was it was very fucked up.
It was highly upset.
So then later she cut a circle out of the cake because she knew people were triggered. She said, people were disturbed, I cut my cake. So how I did it, so this is for those people. And then she cut like this circular thing piece out on purpose.
But she was good for her.
She was like fucking the cake up on purpose. So
good for her.
Who are you gonna say, Chris?
Yeah.
Are we gonna talk about Karen Durant?
Karen Durant?
The white woman that crossed the
I mean, that's not really white people news, but there's a video of this white woman that crossed over this white black kid and scored a left-handed layup on him. And I just started retweeting the video and making different captions. Yeah. I was like, oh, let me guess, she shoot 53% from the field.
Yes,
53. Yeah. I said, I know I'm not supposed to be sharing videos of black trauma on the timeline, but where is Sean King for this? We need justice.
Yeah, you would.
It was funny.
You gotta wonder what that is, black trauma. Like, it is. I mean, did he let that happen? Like,
he never gonna live that down, bro. That's it for him in that neighborhood. It's over. Go, like, you lost, bro. Dunzo on these streets.
Go be somebody.
And she still had her shades on.
And she had on, like, some, like, those were not basketball shoes. Those are, like, sandals or, like, sensible platforms. Yeah, she crossed that nigga. God. Right, she crossed that nigga in a sensible heel and laid it up on him with the power. Oh my god, bruh. Oh, I can't.
BFW.
I think I'd rather get dunked on. You know, honestly, just dunk on me.
You know what? I'm looking at the video now, and she was moving so quick that I couldn't even notice what the fuck kind of shoes she was wearing. Right.
She hit that boy with that. And it happened in front of his friends, which is even worse.
This guy's got to, I mean, he's got to get, remember that movie Drop Squad?
Yeah.
That Spike Lee? He's got to get Drop Squatted. Jesus Christ. What kind of shoes did he have on? It looked like he had on some moccasins.
But they was mocking son, all right, after he fucked up and got scored on.
This is bad, man.
Mm-mm-mm. He was like, what do you call that? I call this speak to the manager.
Yeah, I want to speak to the manager of your ankles real quick. I have a problem. I would like to report to customer service.
Oh, my God. She beat him in some Birkenstocks.
Right. And she had the haircut and everything, man. Damn.
She was. Hey, baby, did she beat him in them rubber Crocs?
No, these were like sensible white lady shoes. They like, she just came from like work.
Yeah, man.
Like she's dressed like she, you can, bro. That's the worst. That reminds me, I played against this dude one time, one on one, when I was younger, probably like 25-ish, 26-ish. It was an old ass white man, and he came into the gym when we were all leaving. Like, we had played from like 5 to like 8, and this is when we was young, so like we ran the court. So we probably played like 8, 9, 10 games that day. Ooh. And everyone was, we were so tired. Like, it was like one of those, you know, be so tired, it's hard to put your clothes on to leave. Well, you like, like, I need to get to the car, but fuck, I gotta put on some jogging pants, and that hurts. And so this dude comes in, and he's all like, hey man, y'all wanna play one, like, come on, play me real quick. And we was like, nah man, we tired, it's fucking late, like, you gotta get here at 5. And this nigga's low, like, straight up for at least 10 minutes begged us to play him one-on-one, and specifically me. And because my friends are assholes, they were like, yeah, Rob, play him one-on-one. And he did a thing where he started like low-key talking trash, and I was just like, bro, you don't even like, this is just silly, like, come on man, I gotta go home, it's just stupid. But he kept going, my boys is hyping him up, and then he whittled it down to like, man, just play me to like 3, like, what, like 3, man, come on man, I just want to get some exercise, I can't come here. And I'm like, why don't one of y'all play him? And they, no, he want to play you, you know, that shit. And so I went to go play this man. I want to say we went to 3-by-1s, right? First one to get 3 buckets wins. I'm dead fucking tired, like, you know, like legs about to cramp up. And I said, rule is I gotta get the ball first, like, you fuck that, you asked me to play. And he's like, oh, you scared the old man gonna beat you? I was like, bro, just, I can go sit back down. And you, okay, all right. So I scored the first 2 points on him, and it's like the whole back half of my body, everything cramped up. Like, I laid it up, and it's just like all my calves was just a knot. I was like, fuck, like, I don't know. So everybody was like, no, you can't quit now, man, no, go ahead. And I was so fucked up, like, he ended up scoring 3 in a row and beat me on some Uncle Drew shit. And when I sat down, the whole time I was just like, I shouldn't have even played him. Like, what was, like, why did I even let this happen? Because everybody was like, yeah, you shouldn't have played him, but we still gonna clown you, we don't care. And so that's what, right, I feel like that kid is going through, man. Like, that kid made that woman's day, man. Like, that dude, after he beat me, like, he was like, man, I got 3 pins in my knee because I'm old. And I was like, oh, so now you're making it worse by saying how sorry you are. Like, you, yeah, like, you could have been like, I played ball in college or some shit, but nah, now you making it just me, I'm sorrier because of you being, yeah, sorry. Like, it was the worst feeling. So you gotta move towns, kid. That's what I would have did.
Move towns.
Last one, guys. Chrissy Teigen takes a break from social media after criticism from Allison Roman. I guess we should probably unfollow each other.
Oh, this is the update?
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. To Allison. Wow.
Yeah, Allison Roman was popping that shit, man. Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that she was executive producing her next project.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on something, and I think I don't know if I said it when, you know, we were on the 3 Guys On, mm-hmm, earlier, like a couple of days ago, where I saw her on Desus and Mero, and I didn't know who she was. Like, oh, this is kind of adorable. A white woman, yep,
cooking
like a cheese sandwich. And I was, yeah, like, oh, that's cute. And I looked her up, like, oh, she's kind of cute. And I just, like, whatever. And then I wake up a week later, I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, that was the thing for me, is I got behind on Desus and Mero. So it was like having a time machine, because I didn't watch that shit till after she got canceled. So then I was watching, yeah, Jesus, and it was like, oh, we got Allison Roman coming up next. I was like, oh, damn, didn't she do something? Oh, that's right. Grand opening, grand closing. She was only famous for like a, yeah, week. Anyway, yeah, for the past few days, Teigen has been fighting off internet trolls that began taunting her after fellow foodie and chef Roman made some critical remarks about Teigen's cooking empire. I really hate that what this drama has caused this week, said the 34-year-old on Sunday. Calling my kids Petri dish babies or making up flight manifests with my name on them to Epstein Island to justify someone else's disdain with me seems gross to me. So I'm gonna take a little break. This is what always happens. The first day, a ton of support. Then the next, 1 million reasons as to why you deserve this. It never fails. Yep. Yep. 3 days prior to her social media departure announcement, Roman expressed that Tegan's rise to success horrifies her. During an interview with the new consumer, Roman detailed her feelings about Tegan's growth as a businesswoman. What Chrissy Teigen has done is so crazy to me. She had a successful cookbook, and then it was like, boom, line at Target, boom. Now she has an Instagram page that has over 1 million followers where it's just like people running a content farm for her. That horrifies me, and it's not something I ever want to do. I don't aspire to that, said Roman last Thursday. She did acknowledge the amount of money Teigen has made from the success of her business venture. Who's laughing now? Because she's making a ton of fucking money. When Teigen heard of Roman's comments, she took to Twitter to share her disappointment. This is a huge bummer. It hit me hard. I have made her recipes for years now, bought the cookbooks, supported her on social, and praised her in interviews. I don't think I've ever been so bummed out by words of a fellow food lover. I just had no idea I was perceived that way by her especially. She added that she thinks it's unfair for someone to try to completely invalidate her work. There are many days I cry very hard because Cravings, the site, is our baby. We love to pump content onto. We do this work ourselves. There is no monetary gain yet. It is just work, 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 and the reward is you liking it. So to be called a sellout, oh, it hurts. Using Roman's words, Teigen explained that she is the machine behind the product. This farm you think of doesn't exist. I am the farm. I am the cows, the horses, the pigs. Anyhow, now that that's out there, I guess we should probably unfollow each other. Roman ended up apologizing for her remarks, calling them flippant and careless.
Yeah, because she lost money.
Yeah, because also not mentioned in there is that Chrissy Teigen was secretly the executive producer on Allison Roman's new TV show that hasn't aired yet.
And she didn't know.
Yep.
It's so weird that, like, you have to kind of shit on somebody. It's like that to me nowadays, like one of the themes of our conversation today has been like how things change, how the industry changes, how things, you know, success comes. And it's like, well, why would that be so weird to say that, you know, she's got a successful Instagram. She's got a cookbook that kind of spawns all this other stuff. I didn't know Chrissy Teigen. I just knew her as like John Legend's funny wife. I knew she was a model. Mm-hmm. She was in a movie that she was good in or something. And then, like, until I found that John Legend fried chicken recipe, that John Legend video was on her YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that she had a line of cookware. I was like, oh shit. Okay. She's doing all this cool shit. So I don't really see her point. I think maybe she should have rephrased it, just saying like, seeing the success of some of my peers is just like overwhelming, and I kind of feel some kind of way about
Listen, that shit ain't nothing. That one, she should have never got specific, but then two, that shit was motivated by jealousy, man. Like, mm-hmm. People don't be coming from a good place with that shit, you know, like, and then it would trip you up. I wouldn't give a fuck if you was the best cook in the world. I'm not gonna executive produce your show anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it is. Like, you have to be careful with that shit. And I think people just say stuff like that. And then, of course, how it looks, because she also came from Marie Kondo or whatever. And so that's like another Asian woman. Right. Yeah. That's two Asian women that she got a problem with getting money. Meanwhile, other people out here getting money, and she ain't got a problem with white people figuring, like, you got fucking Goop out here with Gwyneth Paltrow, but this who you come for? Like, you, and the assumption that Chrissy Teigen must not be doing the work herself and all this stuff. It's just really weird shit. And it seems to me like envy and jealousy. It reminds me of Francesca Ramsey's book, where she talks about, how being envious and being a hater of this woman made her, like, one, make the woman bigger than she was, but two, it made her stop focusing on working on her own shit. Like, I'm over here assuming this woman has this easy life, everything comes to her, you know, naturally, or is given to her, she has no talent, I'm the real talented, blah blah blah. And then you look back, it's like, I could have been working out, I could have been working on my stand-up material, I could have been working on my comedy, I could have been, yeah, you too worried about that. So that's what's funny to me. And the only reason she apologized, cause that's her executive producer. Cause she didn't even at Marie, in her apology, she didn't even at Marie Kondo. She added Chrissy Teigen. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, you know, sound like you only really sorry because your shit about to get canceled. So anyway, right. Fuck that lady. Yeah. All right. We've been doing this for a while now, guys. It's almost 3 hours. All right.
Ooh, we've had a ball.
Yeah, we didn't do any,
it don't feel like it.
We didn't do any real, like, two segments and stuff, but, you know, we get to talking with Chris. It's like, oh, it's like a family reunion over here.
It is.
But one thing that I did want to get to is I wanted to talk about, sword ratchetness, okay? No matter what
all right.
is happening in the world, sword ratchetness continues to happen. And that means that we at the Blackout Tips have to continue to be vigilant and spread the word about this scourge that is attacking the world. Okay, play the clip. There we go.
It's already a minute long.
A sword-wielding man was killed in Las Vegas police shooting. A sword-wielding man was shot and killed Tuesday after police say he approached officers aggressively. At 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, police got a call about a man causing a disturbance at an apartment complex. When they drove out there, they found an unidentified suspect at the top of the staircase shouting he was armed with a sword, police said. Officers talked with the suspect in an attempt to defuse the situation, but the man kept shouting and walked down the stairs. Police ordered the suspect to put down the sword. The man advanced aggressively towards the officers. The officers retreated one of them shot the suspect. The man was transported to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. This is the 7th police shooting in 2020. The identity of the officer involved will be released after 48 hours. Mm-mm-mm. They never take a day off. That's Mother's Day, right? He was out here still wilding. Mm-mm-mm. Maybe that's how he was gonna cut a cake all fucked up. I don't know. Chris, tell everybody where to find the podcast, the album, your Twitter, all that stuff.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Chris Lamberth. I have a podcast called The Mundane Festival. Rod and Karen have been on. You can find the album on, it's called Failed Running Back. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon and iTunes, and it'll be available on all media platforms on the 15th, which is this Friday. And if you sign up for my Patreon, there's tons of hours of material on there, and you'll get a bonus track by the end of this week with me, with 10 more minutes that of material that is not on the album. And then you can also, I think if I'm not cut out of the scene, you can see me on, The Undoing on HBO with, Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant, if I'm not cut out.
And make sure you guys do all that stuff. I would love to see Chris put up that screenshot that his album made at number one in comedy and stuff. I will also, want to see y'all listen to the show. I'm a Mundane Festival premium supporter on Patreon, and you know, I've been on there several times, man. We go on there and kick it every once in a while. So if you're fans of us, you're fans of Chris, go check it out, man. It's always good stuff. And the album is dope, man. Like I said, me and Karen listened to it today. It's my second time listening to it, and I was laughing just as hard as the first time. It was that good, man. It's so funny. Congratulations on making a dope album.
Yes.
Thank you. And I want to thank you, Rod and Karen, for always being supportive of me, whether I had something to promote or just to shoot the shit. I think it's an important thing that you guys do, and not to be too corny, but sometimes you got to give people their flowers. I mean, it's just what you guys have done for me is just as far as having a sense of community when a lot of the world and the industry kind of can be a cold place. Because sometimes you don't know what you're worth until you reach out to the people like you guys. Because there's people that I've asked, hey, can I be on your show? And they just don't. They say, oh, I got more famous people on the show coming. So you can fall the fuck back. Or they don't answer. Or
That's the worst.
Or they don't respond. So, and some of them are white, and, but as far as, you know, as far as, you guys are concerned, I just want to appreciate you guys. And, it's just been like, so much fun to watch your success and to grow. We're growing with each other. And I think like with you guys and Three Guys On and all the whole community, Firestarter crew, it's just been, you guys get people through their day.
Yeah.
You know, you guys people get through their work day, and it's an important thing, service that you guys provide. So,
but we just happen to be a part of the journey, man, for so many people. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a running joke, obviously, but so many of these people that we've been able to, like have on our show and stuff, man, so talented, so very, you know, talented, so hardworking, all that stuff. So it's just dope to see good things happen to good people, man. So, you know, you just one of the people that we're definitely rooting for, and mm-hmm. And you know, and the support goes both ways, man. So thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow morning. Me and Bossy are doing This Too Much, so go ahead and get you guys feedback in on how y'all hate Molly now and all this shit. We'll say that again.
He's problematic. Great episode. Yeah, I can't wait to hear y'all break it down.
Yeah, they mad as fuck, bruh. So we'll be back tomorrow for the regular show and This Too Much. So until then, I love you.
I love you too.
Mwah.